Get Jerry to call in because he's not been able to use the Zoom application on his computer. So we need to hold off for a minute. If I can't get him on there on the phone, then we're probably looking at. I don't know if Jesse can run it because he's on his phone in his car. He can try. If he can't, then I would probably going to default maybe to Michael since he was previous vice chair. Any objections, you guys? Okay. Give me a second.
Probably can. And if you guys don't have any problem, if the video and the audio is okay, I think I could probably do it. Oh, well.
Okay.
Make sure I can pull the agenda out.
Okay.
I'm having some Wi-Fi issues right now.
All right. So Jerry, are you able to,
Hey guys, we just lost your audio.
What was that?
Okay, your audio is back. We couldn't hear you for a moment.
Okay, I'm just trying to get the chair on, just a couple more minutes.
No worries. Thank you.
Scott, you're muted right now.
I'm talking to Jerry on the phone. Okay. Jerry's going to try to call in so he can at least participate. Jesse, are you going to be able to run it from your car, or maybe we should, you want to maybe try to have Michael do it? You're muted.
You can give me a couple more minutes. I'm trying to download, I'm trying to connect to Fremont Wi-Fi so I can download the agenda. If you can give me like two more minutes, I can probably do it. But okay. You know what? It might be better if Michael just did it anyway.
Michael?
I'm always a conscript if needed, so it's all right.
Probably best, just in case I have technical difficulties. Thank you, Fremont, for the free Wi-Fi.
So, Scott, let me know if you want me to go on here.
Okay, but just one second, Michael.
Is my background noise problematic, or can you guys even hear that? Okay.
Okay, Jerry's going to call back in. And Jesse, do you want to have Michael do it?
I think probably just in case. I mean, I'm working on a laptop and a cell phone and a car, so just in case.
Okay. All right, Michael, you good? Okay, let's bring that meeting to order.
Okay, well, welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission for June 2nd. We've got various difficulties with some of our technology. Commissioner Luer is going to be attending, but because of his limited capacity with technology where he's located right now, and Vice Chair Barone in his car. I'm going to run the meeting for now, but we'll have commentary from both of them as we proceed. So the first order of business is, if you wish to attend, the telephone number is area code 408-638-0968 or 669-900-6833 or 346-248-7799, and the webinar ID is 827-2274-7698. The password is 135692, and please press 9 to raise your hand for public comment. So AGP will be helping us monitor those public comments, as well as Scott will let us know if someone's entered the queue via Zoom. So with that, I'll bring the meeting to order here. And we'll look at our consent calendar, which consists of the current and advanced planning processing list. You know, I'm sorry. I've got to go back here. I was getting a little ahead of myself. So we do have a quorum, and we can call to order. Susan or Jesse or Jerry, do you have any comments?
I don't know if I'm – can you hear me on the meeting?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm actually coming through my phone. I'm getting no video. So, no, I just wanted to make sure I could get in. I have no comments.
Okay. Jesse has none. Susan, do you have any comments? And I'll have no comments for this at this point. So now we'll look at the consent calendar, which consists of current advanced planning processing list. And Susan, do you have a question?
Yes. So I guess I'd like to pull the item and question a few things that are relevant to what we're talking about later. The status of the Sonic project and the status of the roundabout potential development. What I was curious about is, as we go forward with other projects, with things that have been in the queue for a while, what happens when a project changes the dynamic of that area? If they've already begun their process, does that, you know, are we allowed to make conditioning changes on that project? So, for example, the Sonic Burger, we're looking at a housing development that wasn't in the works before. And that may change things for the future project. So is what? Just a little explanation of what might be happening with that would be helpful.
Well, status of the Sonic is they're still in plan check. They have been non-responsive for over a year. Cindy can correct me if I'm wrong. At some point, you know, their permits could expire, you know, if they don't move forward. We've been in, I think Cindy's tried to contact them. I don't know if she's actually spoken with them recently.
Go ahead. They did recently request an extension of their planning permit, extended by a year.
That's right. But
which the code allowed us to grant that planning extension. And Scott's correct. They are in building plan check, and I think they're dealing with some, you know, working through the resubmittal on that. But that's where they are.
So will we, as the Planning Commission, see that project again?
No. The building permits do not require Planning Commission approval.
Okay.
Scott, can you update us on the roundabout? I noticed that Caltrans took down some, I think it was Caltrans, took down some enormous trees that were over there probably in the last month and a half or so.
The status of it is it's in design phase. You know, we still need a significant amount of funding to you know, to bring it forward. You know, it's, I think at this point, $7.5 million project or something along those lines. We don't have a funding source, you know, currently to bring it forward. I think the plans were like in 35% design phase or something along those lines. Last time that I talked with our public works folks about it, which has been honestly months.
Okay. So Susan, does that satisfy your question?
It answers the questions. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Would you like to put it back up for approval at this point? Would somebody like to entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Sure. I'll move to approve this consent calendar.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Jesse, second. So is that by acclamation, Scott, or do we need a vote? You're muted.
I can call the question if you want.
Okay, let's do that. Just for,
okay.
For
Commissioner Stewart?
Yes.
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Lohr?
Yes.
Commissioner Lucas?
Yes.
All right. Item passes 4-0.
Okay, thank you. So... one thing I was noticing on our sheet today, Scott, when we had been taking public comment, I didn't see that listed. Are we abandoning that prior to the pieces, or?
No, we can take regular public comment. It wasn't. That's what that whole long section is. Sorry.
Okay.
We can take public comment now. We have several folks that are in the queue, but nobody has their hand up. So maybe they're just there to speak on. Oh, we have one that popped up. Maybe they're just there to speak on items when they come up.
Scott, mm-hmm. is now the time to bring up the change in the agenda so that we get C1. If we can change the agenda for C1 before B1.
Well, I think we were going to see if there was public comment, and then we could do that.
Okay.
Well, you can do it now. It's up to you. You guys can do whichever.
Okay, it's up to you.
Let's take a public comment, and then we'll talk about the agenda. But I'm seeing Mr. Harkins, your hand's up here. Is that something Scott or AGP can...
AGP typically does this part of it.
Yes, sir. I will allow him to talk right now if you'd like.
Thank you.
And Mr. Harkins?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to comment on the project that's going on at 405 Atascadero Road. Am I in order to do that at this point?
We'll have a public comment during that item. This is just for general issues that aren't with the specific public hearing items tonight.
Okay. I was not sure, so I thought I would ask before.
That's
I said
fine. We're not making it up as we go, but we are limping along here with our...
Yeah, I couldn't get you on my computer, so I had to go to my iPad. I'll lower my hand until that comes up. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so AGP, do you see anybody else?
Yes, sir. I might remind anybody who's dialing in on a phone, they need to press *9 if they want to raise their hand. Otherwise, nobody else's hand is up in the queue.
Okay, so I'll close public comment for the general meeting here. And Jerry, you wanted to entertain an agenda switch?
Yes, just due to the length of the first item, if we could change new business item C1 and hear that before item B1. I think we can move the meeting along.
Okay. Does anyone have an objection to that? Do we need a vote on that, Scott, or can we just decide by... you're muted again. Scott, you're muted.
As long as you have consensus, it's fine.
All right. It looks like we have consensus. So we'll look at item C1 under new business, which is 101 Front Street. And this one is Cindy to lead us through.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. I am going to share my screen. One moment, please, while I do this.
And everyone can hear me okay, is that correct?
Yeah. I can hear you.
Okay. I didn't hear anything. Okay, thank you. So, yes, this is 1001 Front Street. This is a conditional use permit review for the Burgess Landing kiosk, which is shown in the vicinity map on the screen. The nearest intersection is 4 B Street. Or excuse me, the nearest intersection is B Street, located at 1001 Front Street. The project is located in the waterfront PDS4 zoning district, and it's located in the Coastal Commission's original jurisdiction. This slide shows for your reference the kiosk location near the public sidewalk at 1001 Front Street, along with the other approved uses on site, as well as the Burgess Landing docks, which you'll see in the lower left-hand side of your screen. And here is a street view image of what the kiosk looked like when it was previously installed. So for discussion purposes, this conditional use permit was approved by the Planning Commission on April 17, 2018, with the condition that required the project be reviewed within 1 year of installation. That decision was appealed to the City Council, and Council upheld the Planning Commission's decision on June 24, 2018, and the approval authorized permanent use of a seasonal 48-square-foot kiosk for the Burgess Landing business. It's planning condition number 9 that requires a review of the CUP. Excuse me. The council's action when they upheld the Planning Commission's decision also modified Planning Commission's conditions of approval. In fact, PC's original conditions 9 and 10 were deleted regarding the requirement to move the kiosk inside, and this allowed the applicant to place the kiosk adjacent to the sidewalk as originally proposed and as you saw on the previous picture. Council added a new condition, number 10, which states that the CUP approval does not limit ability to require future changes as part of any future lease negotiations. In these next two slides, I'll go over these conditions of approval for your review. It's planning condition number 1 that requires an employee to be present during all business hours. As part of this condition, or from this condition, city staff did receive complaints regarding no employees present between October and November last year from Patriot Sport Fishing. The applicant disputes this and states, however, that payroll records were kept in order to be sure that they were in compliance with this condition of approval, knowing that this was important to the Planning Commission. No other complaints from the general public or other businesses were received. Planning conditions 2 and 4 require the kiosk to be located to avoid any sidewalk encroachment issues. Staff did not observe any sidewalk blockages during times of the operational period last year when customers and tourists were present. Planning condition 5 allows kiosk operations to be between April 1 and November 30th annually. The applicant did notify staff last year to inform that the kiosk would be moved 3 days late on December 3rd, and this was due to driver availability after the late Thanksgiving holiday weekend last year. Planning conditions 6 through 8 are public access requirements, which have been addressed by the master lease site holder, as approved just recently by Planning Commission on May 5th. Condition number 9 is the 1 year CUP review that we're reviewing tonight. And condition 10 is the council condition that was added that I previously discussed. This slide shows the permitted hours of operation as they vary by month and as included in planning condition number 1. Although it is currently June, the kiosk has not yet resumed operations for the 2020 season due to the COVID-19 disruptions. And lastly, the seasonal kiosk, as discussed, was operated for 6 months last year in order to provide customer access and address the business needs of Burgess Landing, which docks its boats on site. The location of the kiosk at the sidewalk, as approved by council, avoids impacts to pedestrian traffic inside the parking lot, and overall was observed to be operated with no real substantive complaints, ill effects, or detrimental impacts. Staff has requested that the applicant, in preparing for this meeting tonight, that the applicant notify the city by July 1st as to its intentions for the 2020 season in regards to the COVID-19 disruptions. And that concludes my presentation. I am happy to answer any questions.
So, Commission, do you have any questions? Any questions for Cindy? Go ahead, Jesse.
So this CUP runs independent of this CUP that also requires the public access that we've discussed in the last meeting, right? So this is a different thing and is non, one thing does not bear on the other. Am I correct?
Actually, this conditional use permit has its own conditions that connect to the project. The conditions included repainting of the public access walkway, and that was done by the lease site holder. So while there are conditions of approval regarding public access on this particular applicant, they are the same conditions that are on the master lease site holder, Mr. DeGaramore. And so it's both Mr. DeGaramore's CUP that was recently approved and Burgess Landing have those same public access requirements. But Mr. DeGaramore has been the one that's actually been implementing now.
Thanks.
Susan or Jerry? Questions? Cindy, I had two. One is, just to be very clear, does the kiosk move or not? It's there the whole time?
It's there the whole time for that six-month period.
Okay.
Last year, when the kiosk first arrived on the premises on or about June 1st, there were a couple of, I believe, an applicant's representative can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was about a day or two where the kiosk was in the parking lot temporarily until it was established on its in its location at the sidewalk. But, you know, that was part of the logistical challenges, just setting it up. But no, it does not move. It stays there for 6 months. And then the applicant has to arrange for a driver to move it offsite. I think the intention was to move it well before December 1st last year. Thanksgiving was on November 28th, and so that kind of delayed just getting somebody to come out and move it.
And do the sign components count against the sign square footage for the larger site, or how is that? Is it separate?
The way the kiosk was approved is that it had its own small signs on the kiosk itself. And so it was permitted with some on-site signage on the kiosk. What the Planning Commission approved last month for Mr. DeGaramore did not include specific kiosk signs. It did include signage for the docks. Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we'll open public comment and invite the applicant or their representative. And if I look over at the side, is that Ms. Novak to speak?
Yes, I believe she's waiting.
Okay. So, Susan?
I should probably just say I did have a conversation with Kathy Novak about this project just to get up to speed on it.
Okay. Any other disclosures? Jesse, Jerry, I've not had any. Okay.
Kathy was on here. Now I don't know what just happened. She's not there now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was she phoned in before, previously?
I think she was on Zoom.
She was here earlier. I did get an email about 20 minutes ago on another issue from her, so I know she was waiting.
Yeah, she was on there, and now she's not there. I suppose, I don't know if there's anybody else that's there that wants, is going to speak to the project, but I guess we could just take some public comment if you want, and then she hops back on, we can let her talk.
Okay, since the applicant apparently is unavailable at this point, does anyone in the participant list there wish to make any public comments on this item? Seeing any?
Yes, sir. There's one person with two people with their hand up. Just a moment.
All right. Can you fill us in, AGP?
Here? Sure.
One of them is Jerry.
There we go. And first caller.
Is that me?
That's you, Jerry. I didn't realize. I think maybe Zeke might have turned you off earlier when I had you on.
Yeah. I got turned off. I just wanted to say that I had ex parte communication with Kathy on the agenda, on switching the agenda.
Okay, and Mr. Grantham, can we promote him to the panelist? And that would be a better thing.
He's on his phone, so
let me see if I can.
The only thing I was able to do was to turn it on so he could talk. I wasn't able to do anything else.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Thank you.
Yeah. Looks like we have a couple other folks that want to speak, though.
Right.
Next caller, please.
Hi, welcome. You have some public comment.
This is Kathy Novick. Can you hear me?
There we go.
Great.
Okay. So I don't know what happened. I had the Zoom meeting going, and then all of a sudden when I tried to switch over, then it knocked me off the meeting for some reason. Hmm. So if you're okay, I'll just talk on the phone.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Technology tonight. So anyway, good evening, Temporary Chair Lucas and the Commissioners. I am Kathy Novak, and I'm here representing Ms. DeCock for the kiosk project tonight. I also want to let you know that, unfortunately, Denise is not feeling well tonight, so I don't believe she's going to be able to join the meeting. Since staff has provided an all-inclusive written and oral report, I'll be brief with my comments and happy to answer any questions that the commissioners have. The Verge's kiosk was quite successful last year, as it proved to be a valuable resource for tourists asking directions and questions, fishing education, and for Verge's to have a presence on the waterfront that they so need. I believe that there are a few items that were included in the original kiosk permit that have been resolved, as those were addressed recently with the Giovanni's Fish Market permit. Beyond that, the overall plans for the kiosk remain basically the same. The one main exception to all this now is concerning the installation of the kiosk this year. There have been significant COVID-related impacts to the general business, and the implementation of current distancing guidelines and protocols for sport fishing are making it difficult to support the return of the kiosk to the waterfront this year. Primarily, there are additional employee and business costs, reduced revenues to limited passenger counts, loss of food and drink sales aboard the boat, and importantly, the need for social distancing in the sidewalk area. In place of the kiosk this year, Ms. DeCock would be applying for a sign permit to install a freestanding sign that will be done in the same color and design scheme as the kiosk to provide the information. She has discussed this with staff and will be working on a sign permit soon. So in conclusion, Ms. DeCock would certainly like to continue the kiosk use next year when we can hopefully return to a normal post-COVID environment. Staff has indicated they are supportive and can issue a letter acknowledging this unusual situation and that the kiosk would not be termed as an abandonment of the use. That concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you for your time, and also thank you for your consideration in moving this up on the agenda for us tonight, too.
Thank you, Ms. Novak. Let me see, before we ask you any questions, if anyone else wishes to make any comments on the list. And
there is nobody else with their hand raised in the queue.
The top one is Jerry on the listening, I guess. Okay. we'll close public comment then and ask the commissioners if they have any questions for either Cindy or Ms. Novak. Okay, seeing none, I guess my question I've got is maybe for Cindy or Scott. The project is allowed to have a kiosk. Is it required to have a kiosk? I must have heard like an apology for not having the kiosk, but it was just a request to have a kiosk, right? So there's no obligation for them to put a kiosk in place. Is that correct?
That's correct. They're not required to have that. What Ms. Novak was referring to in the presentation is while we were preparing the staff report, there was some discussion about whether or not they would be able to even put the kiosk up this season with the COVID restrictions. What we had communicated to the applicant was that our zoning code actually has a clause regarding abandonment of use. Mm-hmm. So if they can let us know by July 1st how the COVID restrictions are affecting them, if they can't put the kiosk up by July 1st, then we would be supportive to issue a letter to say that we would not deem that to be an abandonment of use per our zoning code, and that it essentially pauses the CUP. It wouldn't require them to get a new CUP through no fault of their own.
And I would assume any significant modifications to the booth around the nature of dealing with people and the virus would probably be at the discretion of the staff. We wouldn't have to re-review that if they made modifications to it.
I think if it's directly related to coronavirus, I think what we're trying to do is work with businesses to get them to comply with the county's order and the state's order to ensure public health. So no.
Okay. All right. No questions or comments? Would anybody like to? Oh, Susan, please.
My only comment is I really appreciate staff working with businesses to be flexible in this kind of climate. Really pleased to see that. Thank you.
My comment. Yes. Yeah, am I coming through?
Yes, please go.
Yeah, good. Okay. Love this. My comment also would just be a question to the commission and to staff to see if that, at the end of this year, if we would need to review this item again after it's had a full year, probably when things settle down, or if whatever situation we're in a year from now with the coronavirus also. So should we set this up for another review, or would that be a hardship on the applicant?
I have a thought on that, if I may.
Sure.
It seems to me, I wonder if we shouldn't just vote on this and if we were to approve, then they have the choice to whether to put the kiosk there or not put the kiosk there. And then, with the non-abandonment of the use, as Cindy was describing, it seems cleaner just to go ahead and go forward and with the vote and then, hopefully approve. And then, therefore next year we can disapprove again if, assuming things go well. So.
Well, Jesse, I don't believe we would have another year. I don't think this is an annual review. This was just a 1 year at the 1 year mark. So I think we would need to condition this to have another review in a year. And I may be wrong on that. So if staff would let me know. And I'm just bringing this up for discussion.
There is no requirement to have annual reviews on this permit. It's a regular conditional use permit. It allows them to move forward. We could have not done this, and they could have continued to have this use, as the project is permitted into the future. Our thought process was We were one and done. We were going to do the review. They were operating like they were supposed to. Didn't really seem to raise much in the way of concerns, and we didn't anticipate, you know, doing another review, especially now since it looks like they may not even put the kiosk up this year. But that is certainly up to the commission. If the commission, you know, wants us to bring it back and do a review in a year, we certainly can do that. Other than that, there wasn't going to be an action taken by the planning commission this evening. It was, you know, kind of a receive and file type thing. Was a if there was some commentary that you had related to the operation of it or something, then, you know, certainly we can take direction. But, you know, if there's any changes from what the project's condition, that would need, you know, concurrence by a majority of the commission.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that that was clear, that this was not going to be a, this was not set up as an annual review. It was just a one-time review to see, you know, if it encroached on the sidewalk, you know, if the queue encroached on the sidewalk area. Seeing as, you know, I'm not a real big fan of having, you know, private queues out on public, on the public access and the public, you know, especially because that sidewalk is so narrow and we don't necessarily meet our standards the way it is. So I do not have a problem at this point of approving this, but I just wanted to see where the rest of the commission was on requiring another review in a year.
I would say if it makes you feel any better, this is a conditional use permit. It can be reviewed anytime the commission, you know, gets a majority as a future agenda item. You think there's an issue with something that's going on with that property, you can certainly call for a future agenda item to have it reviewed. So, I mean, you have that authority.
Okay, so probably if we get complaints, then would it then come back to the commission?
If that was the desire of the commission, yes.
Yeah, I think that would be a safety valve, and then that way we'll, you know, we won't burden them with a, you know, with a continuing annual review. But if there are complaints, you know, on this item, or there's an encroachment on the sidewalk, then I would like to see it back before us again.
Okay.
That seems reasonable.
Yes. Okay, so Scott, you were saying that we don't have to take action on this. This was just a report. So
let's report back.
Thing is, we had no significant dispute with the situation. I'll just call that one a night. How's that?
Cool. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, so put on our other hat here and get back to public hearing. Item B1, 405 Atascadero Road, application for conditional use permit, coastal development permit, parking exception, and adoption of mitigated negative declaration. So anyone have any ex parte communications here? Susan?
I spoke with a couple of people about this on the property. And I did speak with Kathy Novak briefly about it, too. So, yes. Both with Daryl Briggs and Karen Ott, and another person who lives nearby, too.
Okay. Jerry?
Yeah, I also met with the neighbors on site.
Okay. Jesse?
I also did, and I accidentally, I don't... know if that's the right word, but discuss this with a member of the housing staff. So just FYI.
Okay. And I'm going to apologize to Mr. Griggs specifically, who asked me to come to the site, and I was not able to do so. So our staff member is Nancy Hubbard for this one. So Nancy, do you want to begin?
Yes.
Oh.
All right, everyone can hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you, but the screen looks like it's not quite right yet.
Well, I don't know how to fix that.
Push F5.
Maybe go out of it and go back in.
All right.
There we are.
And maybe push F5.
I'm on a Mac, so that's...
So the little icon on there, yeah, there you go. That might work.
That's what I did before.
Okay. Well, that didn't work. Okay.
No, don't do that.
It might be the way it's going to work. So, yeah.
Okay. There you go. Just look at it from here?
Yeah, we'll just look at the main part of the screen. That's okay.
All right. We can make it bigger. All right, so this is a hearing to consider 405 Atascadero for a coastal development permit, conditional use permit, parking exception, and adoption of the May 2020 mitigated negative declaration. Site information, this shows where the site is located. It's zoned MCR, R4, PD, SP. It is three parcels totaling 0.94 acres. The project will require a lot merger of those three parcels. The site is surrounded by both residential and commercial uses. The project is surrounded by three public streets, Rockview, Sunset, and Atascadero Road. The site has significant slope in the northeast corner. And the site is archaeologically sensitive site and was designed to have minimal, and the applicant designed it to have minimal site disturbance. Project zoning and land use designation, MCR R4 allows residential pursuant to the requirements of the R4 development standards. The PD overlay allows for modification or exemption from the development standards of the primary zone if such action results in a better design or other public benefit. The land use area is planning area 3, and it allows for a mixture of all uses as appropriate, evaluated on a parcel-by-parcel basis. North Main specific plan area provides for extra consideration of building height, roof line variations, street trees, street frontage improvements, and generally requires two stories over semi or subterranean parking areas, and allows for Planning Commission to approve up to 30 feet to encourage roof line variations. So we did receive public comment, or kind of a flurry of public comment in the last couple of days, most of which is posted on the website. I received one email and one phone call today. In general, the map is just showing where the petition that we received, which had about 90 signatures, and this kind of just shows a distribution of where those addresses were from. Not all of the signatures had addresses. In general, the summary of the public comment is concerns about traffic and pedestrian safety, crossing 41 and 1 and the intersection of 41 and Main Street. Project density, project parking, building height and mass. There was one comment, and there was one comment about the AB 52 and the MND review period. So new information, there's Assembly Bill 1763, which became effective in January 2020, that includes a provision to ensure support for creation of affordable housing, which includes increased density bonuses, increased earned development incentives to be granted, including parking reductions, setback reductions, and other modifications to development standards. This bill also makes very clear that a city may not apply any development standard that will have the effect of precluding the construction or development that qualifies for the density or incentives permitted by this section. And then the next section, unless such incentive would have a specific adverse effect upon health, safety, or physical environment for which there is no feasible method to mitigate or avoid such impact. It also has a provision that makes it clear that the city shall bear the burden of proof for denial of a requested concession or incentive. So, more about Assembly Bill 1763. It requires jurisdictional approval for the subject property. For, and maybe the wording is that it requires that you approve the following things. Density bonus of up to 80%. So currently our existing ordinance is a 35% density bonus and then allows Planning Commission to approve greater density bonuses based on developer incentives. This is a straight up density bonus of up to 80% for affordable housing that's 100% affordable, and that would be a maximum of 41 total units. The applicant's asking for only approval of 35. It also requires that you approve modification of the following development standards: height, reduced setback, and parking reduction. And those could be in the form of developer incentives. Back to the project. This is a ground floor plan, and this is an affordable apartment building with four buildings and 35 total units. There's a lobby and a laundry area, outdoor courtyard surrounded by the buildings that includes a playground, and there's a raised garden bed area in the, we'll go with southeast corner near the parking lot at the end of Area D. Parking provided is 35 spaces, including two accessible spaces, rough in for two EV spaces, and a bike parking area. Major design changes after the conceptual review, which was in November 2019, and this shows in the lower right-hand side the image that you looked at in November 2019, and at the top is the current design. So the major changes were the height was reduced from 35 feet to 28 feet. They've created a more pedestrian scale at the ground level, and they reduced the height and the massing in the southwest corner of the building. Here's the project elevation of view from Sunset. Project elevation from Rockview Street. Elevation view from Atascadero Road. And elevation from the east side. So note, because of the sloped property, the view from the east side is a two-story building. Here's a materials board and how the materials will be placed on the building. And a review of the development standards for the R4 zone. The items highlighted in red are the development standards that they're asking for modifications. So that's the exterior side yard. The requirement would be 15 feet, and they are looking for 10 feet on Rockview. The height in the R4 zone allows 30 feet, but as I mentioned earlier, the SB overlay zone encourages 25 feet, but also assumes that you can get a three-story building with below-grade parking, which in this case we cannot. They're asking for 28 feet. Previously, they had 35 feet. Density in the R4 zone, there's a formula that's 24 units per acre. If you add 35%, which they earn through our current ordinance requirement, it would be a total of 31 units. So under the current zoning code ordinance for bonus density, they would be asking for additional four units to be a total of 35. But as I mentioned with Assembly Bill 1763, they qualify for a higher density bonus. They're still just asking for 35. And then finally, parking. Parking, again, for low-income housing is 30 or 53 total spaces, inclusive of accessible and guest parking. They're asking for 35 spaces, including two accessible. Okay, developer incentives. This was written before we added the slide for Assembly Bill 1763. So I've put a note on the bottom that kind of ties back to Assembly Bill 1763 because it mandates certain density requirements that were not reflected in these earlier slides. And so this is really a review again. They're entitled under old ordinance to 31. Under Assembly Bill 1763, they're entitled to 41. They're asking for 35. Okay, setback modification on Rockview. The technical requirement is 15 feet. However, due to the slope in the northeast corner of the site and the desire for them to minimize site work, the project is requesting a 10-foot setback on Rockview. And of note, I looked at the Rockview duplexes, which are two properties down, and they were approved for a 5-foot setback on Rockview, also specifically because of the slope on the site. So the PD overlay zone allows for Planning Commission to approve modification of development standards such as setback that results in a better design. These are two images that show you the view of Rockview. One is a site section that's looking along Rockview, and it kind of shows you the elevation, the positioning of the houses that are north of Rockview and how the site would relate to the street and the surrounding buildings. And the bottom is a photo simulation from Rockview west of Hill. Another modification request is the height. The 30-foot height, as I mentioned before, is allowed in the R4, but the North Main Street specific plan overlay states that in general it should be two stories over semi or subterranean parking, not to exceed 25 feet unless necessary for roofline variations and protection of view corridors. The design previously presented was 35 feet. They've reduced the height and the massing as requested, and the revised project design lowers the height to 28 feet. So the findings, again, is the Planning Commission has the ability to approve the 28-foot height if it provides for a greater roofline variation, and two, it protects significant view corridors. The Planning Commission can approve it under the Morro Bay Municipal Code. Additionally, the developer incentive could also be used to adjust the development standards to make the project economically feasible. So this is just showing two other projects that were approved for 30-foot height. There's the duplexes on Rockview and the duplexes on Sunset. Parking exception request, and again, they applied for a parking exception request, and currently I think under Assembly Bill 1763, they probably could be awarded parking that they're asking for based on the developer incentives. But the parking is 53 total spaces required under our existing zoning code, inclusive of handicapped and EV charging spaces and guest parking. And they are asking for a reduction of 18 parking spaces for a total of 35 parking spaces, which is one per dwelling unit. And again, this is the parking exception request findings that could be met to award the parking exception, or again, in the PD overlay zone, the Planning Commission can find that the parking reduction will provide for a better design and greater public benefit. And thirdly, it could be a developer incentive, which allows for a reduction in the ratio of vehicular parking that otherwise would be required as long as it results in identified cost reductions. And that provision remains true in Assembly Bill 1763. So the staff is recommending approval of the project by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 11-20 and making the necessary findings for the project for approval of the CUP, the CDP, the parking exception with conditions of approval, and the adoption of the May 2020 mitigated negative declaration with mitigation measures.
Are you finished, Nancy?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. So I'll open public comment and invite the applicant or their representative to speak. to the issue?
Yes, sir. There are people up in the queue. Just a moment.
Well, just the applicant or their staff at this point.
Okay. Well, somebody else will have to make that determination.
Jesse, question? Do you have questions? I should ask the commission if they have questions for staff first. Yes.
That's what I was. Yeah, I was hoping to ask Nancy a question. I thought maybe I misheard you, but did you say that the total height variance that we're asked to approve is 28 feet?
Correct.
I'm looking at page A4.2 that talks about a height of 34 feet.
A4.2 of what? The plans?
Of the plans. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's talking about a maximum allowable of 35, and then the gables on the towers look like they're 34 feet and 1/2 inch, and looks like...
So that's from the first floor level. The height requirement for the zoning code is from average natural grade, which is also shown on that exhibit. If you go to the bottom line that says first floor, finished floor level, you go one up, and its average natural grade is 43.55 feet in elevation.
I gotcha. And this is not accounting for any capping. Am I correct in that?
This is as designed, which is minimizing site excavation. That's really the reason why they're asking for additional height, because any other property, maybe, or any other site, you would do excavation and maybe put some things lower. In this site, they are trying very hard not to do site disturbance.
I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood. So are they capping the 4 feet or aren't they?
So I don't know if it's 4 feet, but they are capping where they can. They're importing in and minimizing disruption of native soil. Whether it's exactly 4 feet, I don't know. You can ask the applicant.
And they're talking about that 4 feet is not, so we're talking average natural grade plus 4 feet plus.
I don't know where you're getting the 4 feet. The intent is to avoid as much site disturbance as possible, but they also have requirements to meet. So the MND talks about the design changes to minimize site disturbance, but I'm not sure where the reference to capping 4 feet.
You know what? I think I'm referring to the email we all received from the Chumash tribe, I believe it is, and they had discussed a 4 foot cap. And maybe I'm speaking out of turn. So anyway, you answered my question. Thank you.
Okay.
Jerry, do you have a question?
Yes. Nancy, do you know, are they going to pave the remainder of Rockview Street?
Yes, they're required to do site improvements, sidewalk, curb to meet the existing sidewalk and curb. So the Rockview duplex finished, just the south side of Rockview, halfway across where the mobile home park is. This project will be required to finish the other half of that neighboring site as well as their own frontage.
Okay. And when we discussed this project before, we asked to see if they could include a space for a car share and possibly a bike share space. Was that included in the proposal?
No, I mean, it doesn't change the parking. Whether they can arrange to have a car share or not, we can ask the applicant.
Okay. And then also, can we condition this project, we talked about this before, to prioritize the placement of the clients or the renters to people who either live or work already in Morro Bay?
Yes, and I've drafted a condition for a revised resolution.
Okay, great, great. I'm having trouble. I can't see your screen or anything at this point, or couldn't. And so then the other thing is, will the underground retention basin and structures that they that they're required for stormwater management. How are they going to interact with the existing archaeological artifacts that are going to be in situ? Will the additional water that's going to be run off there, is that going to, does that have the possibility of damaging this archaeological site?
I don't believe so. I think they're looking to do storm drainage detention facilities, but again, they are trying to re-engineer the site to meet the stormwater requirements, but minimize right. site disturbance.
Right, but they're going to be focusing the water and basically ponding it underneath the parking area. Is, you know, the question is, you know, we have no idea where the archaeological resources are. So what I'm wondering is the additional moisture and water, would that over time damage any existing archaeological resources?
It sounds like a question for their civil engineer, because I don't picture it as just a bunch of water running underground. I think it's in containment facilities and then released or absorbed slowly.
Right, but, the water is going to be, instead of being dissipated across the whole site and perking through across the whole site, it's going to be focalized, you know, underneath the parking area. And if that is the area where we have the most concentration of the archaeological resources, it's going to stay wetter there longer than it would otherwise, is what I would think.
I think it's a question for a civil engineer.
Okay, great. And then just another thing, too, is there, you know, on the top of the retaining wall, we've got an 8-foot retaining wall. I couldn't tell from my plans whether they had allowed for a railing, a safety railing on that.
We can ask them. If it's required, they would be required to put one in there.
Okay. And they're doing curb, gutter, and sidewalk along Rock View. And then what is, I'm assuming, and then what is the structure that they're doing along the adjacent properties lot line?
So is your question, what are they doing on the other side of Rock View?
Not on Rock View, but I'm assuming they're doing curb, gutter, and sidewalk up on Rock View. Now, on the lot line between this property and the adjacent property, is there a drainage structure or drainage swale there? And, on that side, on
Oh, on you're talking property, about the well, interior sideline, not on a street front.
Yeah, you're correct.
They're required to... they wouldn't create any additional water concerns for the neighboring property. They would probably...
I'm sorry. I'm not making myself clear. I'm seeing flow arrows on the site plan, but I don't see any sections or any details on what that structure is. Do you have any idea what that is?
You can ask the applicant, but my guess is that they haven't started building plans yet, so they have limited civil drawings.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
There's a section for both sections.
Okay, Jesse or Susan, did you have any questions for Nancy?
No, thank you.
Jesse, good?
I'm good, thank you. There's a site cross section on page 56 of their plan. You can see retaining walls on the side. I believe you're talking about, Jerry.
Okay, I see it now. It's just my PDF that I got was, the resolution was so bad I couldn't make it out on what it was. So... okay, and then I guess I've got one more question for Nancy then. I'm sorry. So according to SB or AB 17, I lost my notes,
1743?
63. It basically states, you know, from what my understanding of it, and I couldn't see your slide either, your screen was blank. to me. So it basically seems that that gives them by right to reduce the parking and to increase the density to over what they're actually allowing or they're actually putting in. Do I read that right?
Well, they would be entitled to a higher density. They're not asking for a higher density. So our approval would be approving what they're asking for.
Correct.
And then the parking reduction. Yes, the parking reduction would be a development standard, which they can ask for a reduction, and it really must be granted unless it would cause adverse impact. They're asking for parking reduction and doing that either as a parking exception, which, you know, for a lot of properties, it would be granted based on a parking exception, or in this case, it could be granted under a developer incentive through Assembly Bill 1763.
Okay. So then the added vehicle miles or, you know, the new metric that they're using for the additional 18 parking spaces, would still keep them, the way I read the traffic report, it would still keep them below the line, you know, the go, no go line, even if we added those parking spaces in. Is that correct?
Wait, you mean go back up to 53?
No, if we, yeah.
You're asking for a reduction.
I think what he was saying is the greenhouse gas for the vehicles at 53 was still below the threshold for being an impact.
Yes. Thank you, Michael. Okay. I guess that's another question to ask the engineer.
Right.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I've got on that.
Okay, Jesse, you have another question?
I misheard, but I thought I heard Nancy say in there that basically the Assembly Bill 1760, whatever it was, basically requires that we approve the reduction in parking. Is that correct?
Through the developer incentive. So it basically says, in no case may a city apply any development standard that will have the effect of physically precluding the construction of a development meeting the criteria for a density bonus through the concessions or incentives permitted by this section. So that's how I read it. I mean, that's not that different than our current ordinance. Our current ordinance, they would qualify for three developer incentives, one of which could be used to ask for a reduction in parking.
Okay, I don't want this to sound adversarial because I just want to be clear, but it sounds like we don't have discretion on parking, and that's kind of been the discussion I've had with folks is, you know, all about parking and traffic and those kind of mitigations. So it sounds like we cannot enact or we cannot disapprove this based I guess I'm not clear, but okay.
I think I get what you're saying, Jesse, and you're correct. They're entitled to four incentives because they have a 100% affordable project. Before AB 1763, they would have been entitled to three, and one of them could have been parking. But we really have very little leeway there to deny those requests. We would have to say that we're denying it, but I think in this instance, it's pretty clear that the reduction in parking is necessary to make the project work. And I think Nancy read that, you know, piece to you before. If we deny an incentive, the city really has to do the homework to say that it wasn't necessary to make the project affordable, or it doesn't impact the density of the units that, you know, that they're allowed to build. So, which gets into the whole, they're allowed to do 80%, you know, an 80% increase. So, yeah.
Okay. I only ask for clarity because that's the discussion I've had. That's everybody's concern is parking, and you know, if it's non-discretionary, it's non-discretionary. So,
okay, Jerry, were you trying to make another comment?
Oh, there's just one more thing that I'm, you know, another area that came up is the traffic on Atascadero Road. How people are using using that as a shortcut when there's traffic on 41, they will dive in there and then try to bypass some of the existing traffic that stopped back at the four-way stop. So one of the solutions or one of the questions I have is, are we going to be able, should we or can we require a stop sign at the end of Atascadero Road before it goes on to Sunset to kind of create a little bit more of a safety, you know, a safety pattern there where people should stop there before they zoom all the way around and either try to get back onto 41 or go up Sunset?
So, I mean, I think that's Caltrans right of way, and I think we'd have to get authorization from Caltrans to put a stop sign there.
There's also, we can't put in stop signs that aren't warranted. So it would have to be something that met warrants, which it probably doesn't.
Okay. It seems, you know, when I was there just today, there were two or three cars that zoomed down there and cut the corner and, you know, and went both directions, and it just seemed like a real hazardous situation. So if we can't do it, we can't do it, but it may be something we might want to talk to Caltrans about.
And it could be something we could bring up to our Public Works Department as well to have a look at.
Okay.
May I say one more thing there when you're done? I'm sorry.
Sure. Go ahead, Jesse.
And I know this is probably, the more I thought about this, I in talking to the citizens over the weekend, you know, trying to spitball and brainstorm on solutions to problems they foresaw, you know, I was kind of talking about, you know, possible traffic or possible streets changes, possible traffic flow changes, and I had brought up that wonder if it would be possible to put to make Sunset a cul-de-sac at the where the project is, and so that, you know, folks aren't trying to turn left heading eastbound on 41 from, you know, from Atascadero Road on to Sunset, which is a problem. I did it when I was, you know, going over to visit them, and I was dangerous, and it was dumb of me to try to do, but I just is that possible even in a is that possible at all?
Implementation of the roundabout will shut that left turn lane off. You won't be able to turn left there.
Right, but I'm saying, would it be possible to make Sunset a cul-de-sac coming down the hill, I guess?
Nothing we've ever looked at.
Sure.
No, I'm good. I'm just trying to hang in there and listen in the best I can.
Okay. Okay, the only questions that I have are, Nancy, we talked in the last meeting about looking into a requirement that the tenants agree to only having one car, one vehicle. Was that pursued to your knowledge? Is there anything covering that situation?
I addressed that in the staff report. And the applicant can address that as well, but they don't really have, they can't require that their tenants have only one car, but as a practical matter, their clientele typically has one or less cars and are big users of public transportation. So they, I believe in their presentation, I believe that they talk a little bit about, the existing facilities that they have. They did a survey just to see how many cars were in the parking lot, and this was in the middle of the shelter at home, so you would think there'd be more cars in the parking lot midweek. But for the two facilities that they looked at, there was less than half of the total units cars in the parking lot.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, if we don't have any more questions from the commission, I'll invite the applicant and their agents to speak.
Hello, I don't know how we do this. Can anybody hear me?
We can hear you. We can hear you.
All right. I'm Scott Smith, and I'm the executive director at Haslow, and I know we have some other of our team members on here as well. I'm hoping that Tom Jess, our architect was able to get on because he's going to do the majority of the presentation, I think, of the technical side. But I just wanted to let you know that that I'm here to answer more programmatic questions, I think, that you might have. We strongly agree with the staff's analysis on this. We know that you all support affordable housing and that you get it, that there's this need that's greater than we've ever had, probably, in times that any of us can remember. But what's frustrating to us as, professional housers is that we all understand how great the need is, but the devil's in the details, and it's so difficult to get any. And frankly, that's why so many places don't have any affordable housing or very, very little. And so I think what the state was trying to do with not only with AB 1763, but with a whole package of other housing bills that make housing more and more by right in certain areas, is they're trying to provide a backdrop of policy that's uniform across the state, because statewide we have such an issue. And so we do agree that with as of January, projects that are 100% affordable are essentially entitled to ask for and receive an 80% increase in density. And also, as a clarification, we did not request that. I think we're just right around 35 or slightly higher than the 35% on our request, as well as the four concessions that we're entitled to that. But at the same time, and I saw the petitions by the neighbors, you need to know that this is not an unusual thing, that every jurisdiction that we work in is doing this. So I think it's just that Morro Bay hasn't had an affordable project for a really long time, but the city of San Luis Obispo, we just... we're just finishing up a project that was the same thing. We were finishing a project in Arroyo Grande. So you're not way out in left field. This is the standard by which cities are able to work with developers, both for-profit and nonprofits, in order to achieve a mutual community goal. Otherwise, it just doesn't happen. And we all kind of throw up our hands and say, it would have been nice, but it was just too complicated and there's too many issues, et cetera. So, and the reality is that it works once it's built. And we surveyed, like Nancy said, we surveyed other properties. How are they working during COVID? And the parking lots were 50% empty. And that was, that was during the stay-at-home order. So, we think it's a very good project. We've tried very hard to follow the direction that was given at the last hearing. Then just lastly, I wanted to mention regarding the local preference, it's our normal practice to provide a local preference. So it would be our intention to prioritize Morro Bay resident living or working. I think there's a fair housing issue about living or working, so we'd have to use both of those, either or. But that's our intention. Wanted to let you know it's going to be well managed. A property this size will have a resident manager that's our employee that lives there and is in charge of managing the property, both maintenance as well as people management. We screen residents very carefully. There are leases with house rules that have to be obeyed. But essentially it's going to provide a great service to the community. So I think it's something that you should really, really actually be excited about. I mean, I think that really that whole 41 and that intersection is due for some modernization to move into the next decades of planning. And some of them have nothing to do with our project per se. But I'm glad that you're taking the time to consider this tonight. We're hoping that you approve it. I wanted to point out to you that, you're going into your next housing planning period, and you've got you've got regional housing need allocation numbers of 277 low and moderate income units that you have to facilitate the production of those by 2028. That's not very long. And you have to give a plan, i.e. the housing element of your general plan is due to get submitted by December to the state to show them the roadmap of how you're going to get there, both where are the sites, you've got to identify them, and what are the policies that you're going to apply to allow those 277 restricted units get produced. Now, looking backwards in time, your regional housing need low-income number was only around, I think it was like 63, but at least and that was the period from 2014 to 2019. At least according to the annual performance reports that you filed with the state, you didn't produce any, zero. So, and I don't think it's because of lack of good intention. I think it's because it's so difficult. Most developers are just completely put off. It's just too difficult. The hurdles are too high. It takes too long. And so we're hoping that you see this as a really exciting opportunity because it is one. And it's going to be something that's really great for the citizens of Morro Bay. Thank you. That's all I have. I know that I didn't take too much time, but I just wanted to mention those facts. Thank you.
No, thank you, Mr. Smith. And we do have Tom Jess here. Mr. Jess, are you able to join us?
I am. I'm here.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay. I think there's a slide presentation that we have. Is it possible to get that on the screen?
AGP, is that possible?
Tom, do you have it on your computer? Can you share it?
No, I probably can. I had sent it in, but I can probably share the screen. Hold on. Let me just pull it up.
Yeah, I think on Zoom, if you've got it on your computer, you can share, and we'll be able to see it.
Perfect.
But I think we see everything on your screen, so make sure.
Okay, so be careful.
See him.
There we go.
Excellent.
Success.
Great.
Nice. Okay, perfect. Well, first off, my name is Tom Jess with Aris Studio Architects, and thank you for having us here this evening. I think Scott did a good job of giving an overview of the approach that we're taking, which is to do everything we can to accommodate the requests of the Planning Commission as well as the public within the constraints of the reality of the project. And one thing I did want to just mention just for the record is that each of the incentives and modifications from the planning standards that we are requesting are necessary for the economic feasibility of the project, and not granting those will preclude the project as designed with the densities proposed. So I just wanted to mention that. I thought Nancy and Scott both did a very good job of explaining the assembly bill and the implications of that. So I won't revisit that. The other thing is we did make several design modifications to the project, to the towers, to lowering the height, to the pedestrian scale, and Nancy covered those. So once again, I'm going to try not to reiterate stuff that she mentioned, but I am available to answer any questions regarding those. So what I did was Nancy had put together a list of seven action items or items that we wanted that kind of came out as a consensus from the last Planning Commission hearing. So I just wanted to go through each of those and explain our response to them. The item number one was request to reach out to the neighbors, and we did do that. However, the neighbors declined our offer to present and discuss the project, so we were not able to actually hold that meeting or that outreach. But we did see the letters that they sent and signed, so we're aware of the issues that they mentioned. The Planning Commission also requested information from ownership about how the parking ratio works at other Haslow projects or other similar projects. And what I will tell you is that parking, when we do affordable housing projects, they're a little bit different than market rate housing. In fact, they're a lot different in market rate housing. And parking is a perceived issue more than it is a reality, in reality, a real issue. And a couple of projects that we have that are very similar. One is the Ironworks Apartments, which were recently developed in San Luis Obispo. This is 46 apartments and 46 parking spaces. And then based on our survey, there's an average of 20 vehicles parked on site at any given time during the day or in the evening, very lightly used parking lot. The same can be said for the South Hills Crossing, which is on South Street in San Luis Obispo. Once again, a one-to-one parking ratio, 43 apartment spaces, 43 parking spaces or apartments and parking spaces. And on average, there was 32 vehicles in the parking lot. And there was at no point where it was full. Planning Commission requested electric vehicle charging stations. And what we are providing is, once again, this is another difference between market rate and affordable housing projects. The tenants in the affordable housing almost never, in fact, I don't think in any of Haslow's projects do they own an electric vehicle that would require charging. So there would be an extra burden, a financial burden onto the project to provide them at this time. However, in compliance with the building code and in the green building code, as well as the standard building code, we are making provisions for two EV spaces that will be ready to adopt them if, in fact, somebody does request them. The Housing Authority would be required to provide them. Also wanted to, this was a talked a little bit about earlier, where we talked about restricting the tenants to having no more than one vehicle. While it's not legal to say what they can and can't own, we do have restrictions in the lease agreements for managing, storing, registration, and operation of vehicles. And as I mentioned earlier in the presentation with one of the previous items, the lack of parking or shortcoming of parking is really a perceived idea going in as opposed to a real project. The tenants just typically as a whole are not very car dependent. There was a couple of renderings requested to kind of show the impact of the project on the views from the adjacent streets and or properties. So we added several to the slide present to the plan set. This is at the top of Rock View. You can see that just based on the grades and the way it works, the proposed project, which is only two stories at this time, sits quite a bit lower than it, I think, was initially perceived and does not obstruct the view from the top. We did go down further down Rockview right along with the project, and you can see that it's still fairly low at this point because of the grade. The grade slopes down quite a bit. And then we did one, we didn't physically go onto the person's porch, but we did use elevations and simulated it from the Google Earth. From what the view would be from the neighbor across across Rockview up on the hill there. And you can see that as because of the slopes of, once again, on Rockview, it's quite a bit higher than our project and don't really impact the views from there as well. There was a question about elevators and whether or not an elevator is required, and then just requested, this was a simple one, just requested the building code section that addressed this. The building code section is 11B206.2.3, and essentially, just kind of to summarize, as long as in housing projects, as long as there are dwelling units with adaptable features on the ground floor or on an accessible route, as well as all the other common use areas and public serving areas are on an accessible route, an elevator is not required. And an elevator is obviously a financial burden that this to the project, and according to the developer and speaking with him, it's something that would make the project infeasible. It would be to add an elevator to the project. And finally, the last item, number 7, was the request to add raised planter beds and a on-site garden for the tenants. This was a great idea that came out of it, and I think it's going to make the project better. So we went right about incorporating those, and you're utilizing this area down here. And here's kind of an enlarged view of what it might look like on the landscape plans, kind of giving you an idea of how that works in. And this is on an accessible route, so it's fully accessible. And the spaces around the planters are designed so that if someone is in a wheelchair or just mobility impaired in any shape, they can access the planter beds there. So that's accessible. And that concludes our presentation. We are happy to answer any questions and from the planning commissioners, or if there's any questions after the public neighbor speech that comes up, we're happy to answer any of those questions as well. And thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. We'll reserve questions for you from the commission until after we've had the public hearing or a public open to our callers here in the queue.
So can this I stop sharing my screen at this point?
Yes, that would be fine. And, commissioners are all incognito at this point, it looks like. So I'll ask AGP to, can you let our queue begin here of people who wish to have public comment? If you wish to have public comment, if you're on Zoom, you can raise your hand. If you're on the phone, I think there's a number 9 that you you push to get recognized, and so
yeah, *9 for if you're on the phone.
Okay, *9.
Okay,
so
we have one person with their hand up.
Right.
Okay.
So, and Mr. Harkins, do you want to go ahead now and speak?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Great. Okay. Thank you.
I still have questions about the parking situation. You know, it's great to do a survey and say that this is what they have in these particular areas is slow, but when you go home at night at 9 o'clock, how many cars are parked there instead of during the daytime? I realize that we have a stay at home order, but again, how many people are staying at home? Have you been to Morro Bay and traveled the streets and seen how many travelers there are? I don't think many people are staying home. So the parking thing becomes an issue because if you were to go down there today, you would probably see no less than 8 vehicles parked on Sunset and maybe 5 or 6 along Atascadero Road. So you bring a project in with only 30, you say 35, but I count 33 on your map if it's even halfway accurate on the parking lot area. And there's just, there isn't enough space to accommodate those people. You say there's public transportation. Take a look at when the bus schedules run, and do people work from, you know, 6 or to 4:30 in the afternoon? Not everybody does. And how would they, you know, be able to use public transportation to get to Santa Maria if they work there, or to get to Cambria if they work there, or any of these other places? I think that that's, you got to think these people are going to have more than one car. They're trying to support their family. They're struggling. Yeah, I mean, I realize that, and it's hard for them, but they're going to have more than one vehicle to be able to accomplish that. If you have kids, who's going to take care of the kids? Got to have a babysitter. Who's the babysitter? The other parent. So I see too many issues there, even with the parking that goes on at this point on Sunset. I have a question in regards to where on the property are the trash enclosures going to be located for the large bins necessary to accommodate these people? I mean, I live on Rockview, and the Silver City Mobile Home Park has trash containers, and it's 7:30, 7:15 in the morning, 6:30. I hear this kind of whoom. Guess what? Trash is being emptied. So it's a little annoying, but I'm just kind of curious on that particular aspect. If you take, and again, back to the parking, if you have handicap parking, that doesn't show on your plan. So you've taken 35. Now you've made it 33. You have the manager. That's 32. And you have 2 of the EV parking. Can anybody park in those? I guess they can. But I see the Teslas coming into town. They're going to pull in there and go, hey, here's a place where we can get our vehicles charged. We'll just pull in here and get you know, be done. The paving on Rockview. Interesting question that 5 feet back is where our condos sit. I live in one of the condos. The parking here is horrible. There's not enough parking. And it's supposed to be guest parking. Oh, I didn't see any guest parking on your stuff, though. I'm curious, the 5 feet setback. Is that going to be on your construction plans? Will that be 10 feet from the center of the roadway or 10 feet from where the sidewalk is? Because if you look down Rockview to the west, you'll see the sidewalk goes out to go around. Obviously, the trailer park area, is yours going to come back in, or is it going to be the same as that sidewalk is and thus reduce how wide Rockview really is in that area? It's just concerns. A stop sign on Sunset, that's not feasible. Nobody stops on Hill and Atascadero Road. I mean, it's amazing there hasn't been an accident there already. And we see people running down the center left turn lane. It's like when the traffic backs up like today and yesterday, it was backed up. People are running down the center left turn lane, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, passing all the cars. So there is a problem with congestion at that intersection. Can it be addressed? You're bringing in more people. You're bringing in more vehicles. I don't think that that's going to help that situation. Even if you do a roundabout, how is that going to help? I see what happens at the other roundabout, and it's very confusing to people. They don't know whether to stop, to go, to yield. So there's some issues that are really going to create issues for people here. One last thing, I was never contacted by anybody to be asked about what I thought about this project. I have neighbors that were never contacted. I'm not sure who refused to not be contacted, but nobody ever contacted me. I get the cards in the mail, but I don't get any contact from anybody else from the planning or from the applicant itself. So anyway, I just thought I'd put in my 2 cents worth, and it's not going to help, and I don't know what the repercussions will be. So far as the parking, I can see people coming up here to park because they think they'll be able to get their cars here, but there's no parking up here. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to me, and have a good day.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Harkins. AGP, you want to let another person in here?
Next speaker, please.
Is it Betty Winholt?
Hi, Betty.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you. There's a question that I asked that has not been answered yet, and that is how many of each size units are we having? How many one-bedroom, how many two-bedroom, how many three-bedroom? Because I think that relates back to part of the parking issue, that if we had more one-bedrooms, there'd be less car requirements and potentially less people using cars. And I want to support everything that the previous speaker said about parking and what I've observed on that parking and what I've talked to people around there about parking, that the new condos on Sunset take up parking all along that street. All three mobile home parks use the parking on Atascadero Road, and there will be overflow from this project. You can, you know, deny it if you want to, but we do not have the bus system. We do not have the close businesses that you have in San Luis, where maybe they don't have as many cars because they don't have to because of their transportation system. But we don't have that in Morro Bay, and I would bet $100 that there will be overflow parking and it will create all kinds of issues. And I want to reiterate what was put on the slide, that that Senate or that assembly bill did not say you have to do the exception on the parking. It said you do unless there's a detriment. And I would contend, and as others in the neighborhood would contend, this is a detriment, and therefore you have leeway as commissioners to modify this in some way. And I think that's real important, that you know that you have an option there and that it's not mandatory, because there will be consequences. I'm concerned, and I mentioned this in my email, that there's been no contact with Caltrans. Regarding, and I don't know if you've noticed, but when you turn from the intersection of Main and 41 and you turn east onto 41 and then immediately onto Sunset, there is no turn lane there, even now, even though there's a residential street. So when you have more people going in and out, is Caltrans amenable to creating some kind of striping, at least, if they're not amenable to the stop signs on Atascadero Street? I think it's a mistake to approve this tonight until you've talked to Caltrans about that. What else did I want to say? I think those are the main things. You've seen my email. I don't know that the applicant saw my email, but I would like a response on how many units of each size there will be. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Winholtz. AGP, would you like to put another person in? Is anyone else in the participant?
Well, nobody with their hand raised.
Would any of you in the line there, I don't know if I want to publicly say anyone's name here, but I can see on Zoom. Okay, we have
there we one. Go.
There we go.
And caller, you are online.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Mr. Arnold. Thank you.
My name is Charles Arnold, and I live in the mobile home park that's behind this project. Like many of the other callers, I too am concerned about the parking situation. I'm concerned. I don't really have any any belief that it's going to change significantly, that 35's the number you're going to go with. But my big concern is also down on Atascadero Road about overflow parking, because although I do agree that the 35 parking spaces is what's going to happen, I don't agree that that's going to be sufficient. And I do think that there's going to be overflow parking. I'm concerned about the overflow parking falling out onto Atascadero Road. We already have excessive parking out there, as was previously stated by the previous caller. And it doesn't sound like there's going to be any fencing or anything like that around this project to really discourage residents from parking on Atascadero. And it looks realistically like what's going to happen is people are going to park on Atascadero and just walk through the flower beds and then through the parking lot to their apartments. I also had a question regarding the rear of the project and what kind of retaining wall or fencing or what kind of wall is going to be on the backside. You know, we're only about 10 feet off the property line, and it sounds like the setback's 10 feet. And I'm really not super excited about having a window looking right into my window, if at all possible. If there's some kind of fencing or something that's going to go up on the backside, I'd probably prefer to see a fence than somebody else's kitchen. So I don't know if those issues can be addressed, but I would appreciate the input from the developer. Also, one other thing for I believe his name is Scott from the Housing Authority, and because you're going to be in the implementation of this in terms of who gets to live there, and I would strongly encourage you to allow people who not only currently live in Morro Bay, but also folks who are working in Morro Bay. I know quite a few people that work with my wife that actually have to travel to Atascadero to live, because there's no affordable housing in this town. They've made a commitment. They've been working for their employer for years, and they've been driving back and forth on 41 for years. And, you know, that's not good for the environment. It's not good for a lot of different things. And these folks could literally live right across the street. I mean, they could probably sell their car, you know, and because a lot of the folks I'm talking about work across, and when they work in the immediate neighborhood. So if you could certainly expand the availability to employees of Morro Bay businesses, that would be greatly appreciated as well. Thanks so much for allowing me to speak.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Anyone else in the queue, would you like to raise your hand?
You want to talk?
Yeah, where do you click to, where do you raise your hand?
We're hearing you. Whoever you are, we're hearing you. But I don't see you listed on the Zoom screen, but I was hearing you. So
this is Daryl Briggs. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Daryl Briggs. I just want...
Yeah, you have another device on.
What the last three callers have said, and we're gonna have horrible problems here with the parking on Highway 41 and on Sunset. That the top units are already using this road down here. The trailer park across the street is using this road. My trailer park is using this road, and I don't believe I was ever contacted. I believe what the gentleman up here said. I don't believe I was ever contacted by the builders either to discuss anything.
We've got it shut off because of the...
Daryl, you just have to speak. They're not going to respond to you.
Oh, I was wondering, and that's about all I have to say on it. I just really do agree with what everybody else said. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Griggs. AGP, we have another person with their hand up.
Caller, you are on.
Can I be heard?
Yes.
Oh.
Please join.
Hi, guys. It's Joe and Groff. You're experiencing a great deal of difficulty trying to be participating in this meeting. I'm sorry for that.
Okay. I've got to ask a point of clarification here. If Scott can hear me on this one, we will be listing Joe as present then at this point.
Yeah, I think so. Joe can participate.
Okay, I saw the name that I saw Joe's moniker up there quite a long time ago. So, Joe, have you been with us for a while?
Yeah, I've been doing all sorts of things, including switching computers and using the telephone, and
okay,
no avail up till now. But anyway, I won't bore you with that.
I thought you were a citizen there with your moniker there, but we'll admit you in your real person.
Is there anything you can do to actually get me to join the meeting? I can't seem to do it for buy-in.
Scott may be able to, or AGP.
Well, so now that you're in it, so as a panelist, so you should be good moving forward.
Okay. Or, I don't want to create any technical difficulty. I'm fine with you being able to hear me, and I can hear you.
That's pretty much
technical difficulties tonight. So,
okay,
we're being held together by tape and rubber bands tonight, I think. So, anyone else in the queue would you like to speak?
Yes.
Oh,
I see. You don't want me to speak right now.
No. You're a commissioner. You're a real commissioner now. So you're up here on the dais with us. So. I'm just seeing a number of attendees there, so I'll assume at this point that none of you in the attendee list wish to make any more public comments. So I'll say going, gone. Okay, so I'll close the public hearing for the people outside of the commission and the applicant. We do have a number of questions here that people have posed. I'll see if I can remember them all, but I would like to see if Mr. Smith or Mr. Jeffs, you could, or staff, respond to some of these comments. One is the retaining wall on the east side. Do we have a retaining wall on the east side with the adjacent private parcel there?
Yeah, this is Tom Jess, and if it's okay with you, I'll share my screen one more time just to share. So I think you guys can see the site sections. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so these are the two site sections, and I think Commissioner Barron was mentioning. So there is a retaining wall. It's a maximum of 8 feet high, and it slopes across the site. On the rock view side, which is this side here, you can see that rock view's up here. There's a 2-to-1 slope down, and then the retaining wall's down at the bottom of the slope here. Mm-hmm. So it's not right up against the street, or you know, it's down quite a ways. And then there was another question that Commissioner Barron had about. Oh, and then I'll just finish the thought. And then on the adjacent property side, it's there's a retaining wall, and then there was also a question about the drainage behind it, and there is a concrete V-ditch behind it that's 2 feet off the property line for the drainage there. And then what's not shown in here, because this is the civil drawings, is there would be a 6-foot-high solid fence along that property line as well. So that would be a solid wood fence on top of the retaining wall here.
Do you also have a fence on top of the retaining wall on the rock view side then?
I don't think we would need one just because you'd have to fall down the hill first before you got there. There's no pedestrian location there, and there's no overlook issues where we would need to block a view on that side.
I imagine that's a building code issue anyway.
Correct. If it is adjacent to a walking path, there is a requirement. And then there's a question about the archaeology and what we're doing to address that. And I think that this diagram actually shows that pretty well too. Sorry to get off topic, but we're just on this subject, going on this diagram. So the existing grade is the dashed port part, and you can see that where we're actually building is quite a bit above that, and that's that cap that Commissioner Barron was talking about. So there is a little bit of cut adjacent to on the high side, but for the most part, we were able to keep everything as high as possible to keep not to go into the grading.
Okay. Can you outline again the outreach attempt? Some of the people were saying that they weren't contacted. Did you have a methodology for the outreach that you attempted?
Yeah, the outreach was actually handled by one of the partners on the project, and he reached out to the members that were at the last Planning Commission hearing, and I think he had their contact information from that and reached out to them in that manner.
Okay.
I don't have their names, unfortunately.
Okay. And then can you address the issue of contact with Caltrans?
Yeah, so as part of this project, we did have to do a traffic study, and the traffic engineer had extensive coordination with Caltrans in the preparation of the traffic study. So they were involved in it from the very beginning. A lot of the decisions were made in conjunction with Caltrans.
And then can you, just for the meeting purposes, can you go over the ratio of 1-2-3-bedroom sure. split? In the project.
Yeah, there's 17 one-bedrooms, 9 two-bedrooms, and 9 three-bedroom units.
And can you tell me, when you were quoting the Ironworks and the South Hills projects, do they have a similar mix of bedroom count in there?
They do. They were both large family projects. I had it on a slide, but I took it off because I didn't think that you would be able to see it in the slide. So I apologize for that, but they are very similar, large family projects.
Okay. We had a question about the trash, and my understanding is the trash is opening towards Sunset in the corner amenity building.
That's correct. It is right here.
Yes. Okay. Very good. And that's all enclosed in the building mass. So
that's correct.
So that would be rolled out on the days of pickup or something like that? Or they have a separate schedule for picking up?
That's correct. So the trash in its normal state when it's being used is behind doors and enclosed in the enclosure. And there's a curb cut that you can see here where we would wheel it out and it would be picked up and then put back in.
And in your other projects, do you have any effort, or are you aware of an effort with rideshare or other kind of car sharing or zip car type thing? Has that worked anywhere else?
I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of them utilize of the Housing Authority using that. We have used it on other projects in San Luis Obispo, but not projects with the Housing Authority that I'm aware of.
So on this slide that you've got up there, could you address the improvements along Rockview in and adjacent to the public right-of-way there?
Yeah, and there was also a question about the 10-foot setback, which I think that this also helps illustrate. So the curb and gutter along Rockview is going to be out similar to where the curb and gutter is for – here, I actually have Google Earth up as well. So you can see here's the curb and gutter – out here, so it's a continuation of this line carried down. And then so there is a fair distance between the curb and the back and the actual property line, and then our building is set 10 feet back from the property line itself. So it's quite a bit back, maybe, you know, just looking at it, maybe 25 feet back from the face of the curb to the building.
Right. And then that continues around so the setback is from the property line, not from the curb that anyone would presume on Sunset at this point. The curb is actually out in the right-of-way at Sunset in the proposal.
That's accurate.
And there's no parking along Sunset in this iteration. Is that correct?
That's correct.
On the east side. And then similarly, there's nothing that is accommodating parking along Atascadero Road.
We're putting in a curb and gutter.
Yeah.
Along there to, and there is parking along the curb and gutter there.
Okay.
If you look on Google Earth now. And that was one thing that, you know, right now they just park on the dirt a little bit.
Sure.
Just for reference and not to, belabor the point, the, mobile home park adjacent to us has a very similar density, approximately 35 units to the acre.
Mm-hmm.
And almost no on-site parking. You can see just based on the Google Earth image, the parking that is there is not really code compliant designated parking. It's just someone pulling in front of it. So the residents of this project or this housing community here have been utilizing on-street parking to subsidize their lack of on-site parking. as well as these residents here, I've heard iterated that they likely do not park in the garage and utilize the street parking. And that's as a general statement, the street parking along here. So what we're requesting is we're actually providing the parking on site that, based on the other projects, similar projects, is ample to accommodate the number of cars that we expect here. So so we feel like the parking that we're providing is adequate and will not exacerbate the existing parking.
Mm-hmm. So it, based on the Google Earth image that you have up there, as well as looking at the previous image, do you imagine that that approximate dirt line of the site to the west there along Sunset, is that approximately where the curb is going to be?
Approximately. You can see it's a little, we're pulling it in a little bit here. You know, this property line out here kind of follows the curve. So there, it does come in a little bit.
Okay. And let me see if I have any other questions here. I'll have some questions after I open it up for my colleagues here. So, Jesse or Joseph or Susan or Jerry, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I would love to jump in.
Please go ahead.
So a couple questions specifically for the Haslow gentleman. Scott, I believe it was. Are you available, sir?
Mr. Smith.
I just had to get off mute there. Sorry. I'm here.
So I realize this would be an I don't want to say outlandish request, but an out of the ordinary request for sure. But given the discussion about parking, how feasible would it be, or is it feasible at all, for Haslow to partner with a private company, a for-profit company, obviously, that would possibly have some kind of a bicycle rental type of situation where, you know, folks could, you know, maybe kind of like you would see in the bigger cities where they rent the scooters and the bikes, you know, maybe a couple bikes there that folks could take down to Spencer's or to Albertsons and do the shopping in, you know, some kind of basket situation. So maybe that would alleviate the need for a vehicle. So, if, you know, maybe their only need is to go grocery shopping and to go to pick up their prescriptions. If they could do that on a rental type bicycle, that seems to at least help the situation. Is that something that Haslow has the ability to entertain?
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean, frankly, we've not the projects that were mentioned earlier, but we did a project a few years ago where we actually bought brand new bicycles for every household that was moving in there, and they get used quite frequently. So we're very open to that. We're also really open to that idea of the whole car sharing thing or Zipcar. I just don't understand it well enough, but I'm very intrigued, and we're intrigued with it from an environmental standpoint as well. But I mean, we agree there's with a simple bicycle, they could quite easily get to Spencer's or a lot of different, I mean, you can get all over Moore Bay really. So,
right. And, you know, in my thoughts, you know, the electric bike, you know, kind of might be priced out for some of these lower income folks. So if we had some kind of a rental so they could, you know, maybe rent it for an hour, it costs them, you know, $8, $10. Maybe that's something that they could really work into their budget. And, you know, an electric bike would obviously, you know, benefit those that aren't as physically able as others, you know, say somebody about increased age or something. So anyway, if you have the ability to, I would love to see that kind of a project or that kind of that implemented in this project. So I know that that's not something we can condition, nor would I want to condition, but please consider it.
No, we would like to consider it for like I said, for sort of our environmental values as well. It really ties in closely with that. But what we would like to do, and we do this on many projects, is sort of develop internally like a transportation management plan or whatever you want to call it, traffic mix, where we have a package of sort of incentives to discourage people from driving as much as possible. And that could include the bicycles. It could, if we're able to get them some discounts or incentives to use that bus system more frequently, I know, like what Mr. Arnold had commented from the public about trying to get people that already work there, and maybe they wouldn't have the need to drive as much. I would like to do an early, we can do that. And so I would like to do an early sort of public outreach, business outreach, I guess I would call it, business outreach meeting with, you know, the chamber and with the, you know, whatever the best forum would be, but to let, make sure that they know that this is coming along and try to get, I'm sure all those employers have employees that are struggling. And so if we could get them into the housing, and if it could also, if they're already working there, Morro Bay is not that big of a town. You don't need a car to get around in Morro Bay necessarily, unless you've got, you know, some physical restrictions, but.
Right. On the, my next question was, Mr. Jess was speaking about chapter 11B, 206.2.3, talking about the elevator situation. That was talking about privately funded dwellings or privately funded multifamily. So I was confused about the funding source for this. I understood this to be a publicly funded project, or at least a tax credit type situation. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's correct.
So it is publicly funded?
Yeah. The largest share of the funding will be coming from the tax credit program, which is basically private investors receiving tax benefits. The money itself is private money, but what incentivizes them to contribute the private money is the tax benefits that they receive over the life of the project.
So would it be appropriate to say that the privately funded exceptions of Chapter 11B of the Building Code are not applicable, or are they applicable?
I think, I know they must be applicable because, for example, the Ironworks project that you saw as an earlier example that Mr. Jess showed on the screen, that is 46 apartments. That is three story. That is tax credit, and it was not required to have an elevator, but the funding source was essentially the same as what this is slated for.
Okay. I was curious about that. So how would hypothetically somebody needs to be taken out on a gurney from a third floor? And is the ladder truck going to be able to get a patient from that?
You know, I
might be a better person to answer that.
Yeah, I think that's getting me
for a, yeah, for sorry. I'm, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, my hope is that in these building codes that they think all those things through and that things are the dimensions are accurate, but I'll let Tom respond.
Correct. Okay, thank you. As far as the funding sources, TCAC, which is the Tax Credit Authorization Committee, it is technically privately funded, so it's required to comply with Chapter 11A. However, I mean, I guess we're getting a little bit into the weeds here for a Planning Commission hearing, but the code section that we did quote is 11B, which is the more restrictive of the two, because you'd get additional points for being compliant within the dwelling unit to be compliant with 11B for the accessible ones, actually installing the grab bars and doing the counters at 34 inches. And then as far as the evacuation of people from the second and third floors, it's no different than any other apartment project where they're not required to have a elevator. It's fully within the requirements. I don't even think it needs to be conditioned that the project must comply with the applicable building codes. So this project will be designed to be 100% in compliance with the applicable building codes in regards to egress, emergency evacuation, and so on and so forth. So we're not asking the Planning Commission to approve anything that's outside the requirements of the building code. And we're confident that we're in compliance.
No, and I realize this is getting in the weeds a little bit, but I live in the weeds, so... the other question I had was is slipping my mind, so I'll pass the baton.
Okay, if I can jump in here, I got just a couple questions.
Sure, Jerry, go ahead.
Okay,
my interest on the retention basins and the structures for handling the stormwater management. It seems to me that they're going to allow a lot more moisture to stay in contact and be more focalized in those lower areas where there may be more archaeological resources. Has there been any thought on that, or is that going to be detrimental to the basically what's going to be the buried resources?
Once again, this is Tom Jess responding. What I can tell you, those are very, very good questions, because it's something that you wouldn't think of right off the top of your head. But I will tell you that throughout this process, this has been one of the most intensive that we've worked on with the archaeologists back and forth, in terms of doing everything we can on site to mitigate the impact on the archaeological resources. That includes raising the buildings, as we've discussed, and what we are required to comply with the stormwater requirements. So what we've done is we've increased the number of the basins beyond what was normally required, because normally you can just make them deeper and have fewer of them because each one has more capacity. We've spread it out over a wider area to keep them shallower so that we would impact the ground less. We also did a retention pond in the one little area of soil where we are exposed, you know, above ground, to keep it over there. As far as whether or not it's going to impact the resources itself, having additional moisture there, I can't speak to that because we don't know what the resources are there. But I will tell you that we do have a requirement to have the archaeologist on site during the excavation. And depending on what's found or discovered, we would be required to mitigate that. So if there is potential, the safeguards are in place, in the fact that the archaeologist is on site during the excavations to make sure that we address that appropriately.
Okay, thanks. And then also there were a couple questions about utilities and access and capabilities there on the site. I think the neighbors were complaining that there had been a change in their water supply, and they had low volume and low pressure in that area. Have you contacted Public Works to see if there's enough volume and pressure to supply the fire stands?
Yes, as part of the completeness review, Public Works reviewed the plans, commented on the plans, both the utilities, the stormwater, the utilities, the public improvements have all been reviewed by Public Works. And if for some reason, I had not heard that there was a pressure issue throughout the conversations, that has not come up. If there is a pressure issue for the fire sprinklers, it would just require a fire pump. There's a remedy for that if that is an issue, but as of right now, I'm not aware of it being an issue.
Okay, and just for my information, where are you going to be pulling utilities from, the power?
Let me open the utility plan and see. So, sorry, just got to get to that plan.
So, Jerry, while we're waiting, Public Works Condition Number 7 addresses the water pressure issue and requires an 8-inch diameter pipeline installation 100 feet along Sunset between 41 and Atascadero Road to resolve the issue.
Okay, great.
It looks like the majority of those utilities are coming off of Sunset.
Okay, and will they be undergrounded across the street, or how are they going to access the site?
Yeah, all the new utilities that are accessing the site have to be underground.
Okay, from the existing poles.
That's my understanding, correct.
Okay. Let's see, I think. And I just concur also with what Jesse said about bike share, car share, whatever we can do to minimize
basic, you know, vehicle trips back and forth with, you know, with the minimum, you know, scooters. Scooters are better than diesel trucks. So whatever we can do as far as an operational base would, I think, would be greatly appreciated. And then all in that, the prioritization of people living and working, living or working in Morro Bay to begin with. Okay, I think that's the questions I have for right now. Thank you.
Okay. Michael, I have a question.
Sure. Go ahead.
It may have already been answered. I'm not even sure the question was asked when I was trying to get connected. But with respect to the applicant attempting to limit tenants to people who had one car, what was the response to that?
Well, I could summarize, but I'd rather let them tell you. They just want to mention to Joseph the cross studies you did with the other facilities that you manage.
I don't mean a comparison with the other the other developments in San Luis Obispo. I'll be more explicit. Sure. Is he able, when interviewing applicants to become tenants, can he restrict those potential applicants to people who attest that they only have one car?
No. I think Scott had mentioned that before. You can't. It's a fair housing issue.
Uh-huh. Okay. And the other, I'm not sure to whom I should address this. The roadway on Rockview that abuts the proposed project, that's going to be paved and curbed as part of this project. Is that right?
That's correct. They're doing frontage improvements on three streets that abut the site.
Okay. Those are my two questions.
Susan, do you have any?
So looking at the Google Earth picture that Mr. Jess had up before, it looked as though, and then looking at the plan, it looked as though the parking area will pretty much go, you know, up to the edge of Atascadero Road. So it's sort of covering that berm where now there are a lot of cars parked for sale or just parked. Is that correct? So there would now be a curb and less likely parking along Atascadero Road, because that would certainly narrow that road if cars were parked there.
The site is developed within the property line and meets all the setbacks.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is it looks like it goes up to a point where it will disincentivize parking along Atascadero Road adjacent to the parking lot of the project.
I can't.
You got nothing. Okay, moving on from that.
You mentioned that there will be curbs along Atascadero Road, so there possibly could be parking. Certainly, there won't be as much parking because I think people are parking on private property.
Yeah, I think they are up on the dirt on the private property. And curious if we had, so there's often cars for sale along there. Do we have any codes about that?
72-hour parking limitation.
Okay. And then looking at Sunset and the speed of cars going, especially down that road, so south on Sunset, and the width of it, which is not very wide, has there ever been any thought of having a red curb all the way along the west side of Sunset?
So not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Okay. All right, that's it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Susan. And I'd just like you to explain, if you can, this one's for staff first, I guess. Nancy, are you concerned about the communication from the Salinan group and any kind of time they've had to look at the declaration, given what was also included in the correspondence, which was the governor's request to have extensions on time periods at this point?
No, all of our outreach both occurred before April 20th, which was the date that everything after that was going to have an extension. And I did receive confirmation from the Salinan tribe that they have, they understand that the requirements were met and they have found that their concerns were addressed in the MND.
Okay, that was the other thing I wanted to make very clear was, to your knowledge and to the applicant's knowledge, the sensitivity about the nature of the cultural remains here is paramount, and the project has been modified to try to address that at a very high level.
Yes, and we've had significant consultation, including the applicant involvement. So, and the applicant did some direct involvement last summer. So we're picking that up again. We're doing a better job of communication now, and we're going to see it through the conditions of approval.
I just noticed staff turned over quite a bit since I've lived in town, and this part of town's had a very checkered past with sensitivity on the part of the city to cultural issues. So I hope from the nature of what's gone on, this one is going to be a model as opposed to a poster child. Let's see if I have one more question here. The elevator. Does anyone else have any more questions before we start comments? Okay.
Anybody? The one thing I would ask, Michael, the one thing I'd ask too is just traffic control. You know, if they've talked to Caltrans, if they could reiterate that for both Atascadero Road and Sunset, there was just, you know, when I was there meeting with the clients, and I've seen this before, you know, people were driving 40 miles an hour down Atascadero Road and then making the turn back onto 41. So if there's any way that they could work with Public Works or with Caltrans to try to get some kind of a traffic calming on that street, what else have they done for that? So I guess that's kind of a comment and kind of a question.
And Mr. Smith and Mr. Jess, do you have any response to Commissioner question?
It sounds like something that, well, from Haslow's standpoint, we're happy to think of what it, you know, to have a discussion about traffic calming measures along there. I don't know what that, you know, I don't know sort of jurisdictionally with Caltrans how they feel about that kind of thing and et cetera, but I know, you know, cities do put in those kinds of things to get, you know, to calm the traffic a little bit. So, what do you think, Tom?
I think that as you said, we want to be good neighbors and we want to make sure that we have a safe environment. There was a traffic study done and the recommendations from the traffic study have been incorporated into the MND. So, whatever was recommended by the, traffic engineer, the specialist that studied it has been incorporated into our plans. So, or into the conditions of approval, I should say. So we'll be in full
compliance there. Yeah, I understand that, but there's also a difference between an engineering study and common sense sometimes. And just from personal observation, like I said, I was there for a couple hours just, yesterday, and there were three or four cars going probably 35, 40 miles an hour into that turn there. So it seems like, you know, that's creating a hazard both on Atascadero Road and on Sunset Avenue. So if you could basically do your ultimate conscientious effort to try to get some kind of a control mechanism in that corner going either or both ways.
Jerry, if I may interject a thought here, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So, you know what? I've been thinking about this a lot. And it seems to me that the city and the state, maybe even the county, would have some sort of obligation to our citizens. And I wouldn't want to, you know, obviously burden the Haslow project, but, you know, just talking about this since we're talking about it,
you know, improving that frontage road so that, you know, there's walkable sidewalks and, you know, adequate parking. And, you know, there's a lot of wasted space there. And it seems like we could do a lot better for our people, you know, and if there's going to be a highly urbanized type of area, we're going to have tons of people, tons of cars. We know this. We know parking is a problem already. It's going to get worse. That's a kind of a nature of the beast, but we ought to be looking at how can we improve that frontage road in association with Caltrans to make everybody's life better.
Including the bike lane along there.
Whatever we do, you know, sidewalks, I mean, I'm thinking sidewalks would be highly appropriate if we have, you know, a ton of people without cars, you know, trying to get kids to school, you know, groceries to the, from the grocery store, you know, I mean, to me, I think we ought to put this on the high priority on the city's wish list of things we could do in the not so near and not so distant future. So that's my thought.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. Are we in the comments now? Was that your comments, Jerry?
those are still questions to the applicant.
Okay. Would anybody like to take a stab at comments first, Jesse or Susan or Joseph?
Well, I'll go first.
Okay,
go ahead. Sure, let Joe go first.
Sure. All right. Well, you know, stating the obvious, I think this the issue that this trends on is the adequacy of on-site parking. And that in turn turns on the accuracy of the model that the applicant is presenting, the two projects that exist now in San Luis Obispo. And, you know, everybody on the panel knows that I, you know, longtime supporter of market-based affordable housing, but I do have some problems with the lack of information data on those two models. Because, you know, stating the obvious again, Morro Bay is not San Luis Obispo. So I'm thinking right now, but I feel the need, to have some data rather than a fairly informal examination of a parking lot a couple of times. I mean, I think we should know at various times on a given day and multiple days, how many cars were in the parking lot. But we should have some idea of how many people in the project are employed as opposed to retired. We should also know where they're employed and what the what the public transit options are for those properties in San Luis Obispo. And then we have some basis in the details. That's what's missing, is the details. We have some basis in the details to decide whether that model can really be transplanted to Morro Bay and be accurate. And to facilitate that, I wonder, you know, somewhere in this country, there must be numerous projects that are situated in tiny little cities like Morro Bay that have even smaller employment bases and an almost non-existent public transit system in neighboring larger cities, and how do they fare in terms of their one unit per one automobile ratios? I need some information about that, particularly in view of what I'm hearing, that the applicant I was hoping the answer would be that they would make their best efforts, but I'm hearing that they really are prohibited from efforts to try and limit the prospective tenants to people who only have one car. There's just too many questions, I think, at this point as to whether the model will actually work. We have to get more assurance that the model works is what my position is right now, I think. And I'm also wondering, I was out there yesterday and I was looking at the Rockview Road and particularly the property that borders the property. And there's not much utility, I think, in that road. And I wonder if,
if ultimately this project gets approved, and ultimately the model appears to be somewhat accurate, and that there is a problem with sufficient on-site parking, I just wonder if we might not have a fallback plan where we, the city abandons a portion of that Rocky Road and turns it over to the project as additional on-site parking. Those are my thoughts right now.
Okay, Susan or Jesse? Jesse, you want to go?
Oh, sorry. If Susan wants to go, she can go. But I'll go now, unless she wants to go. So my comments basically are about parking also. I don't want to use the wrong word here, but I think it's safe to assume that there's going to be an increased demand for parking along the Furnace Road. I don't want to call it Atascadero Road. I believe Atascadero Road is actually Highway 41, so I'm going to call it the Furnace Road. And along Sunset, and I believe that's inevitable. But I believe that there's also already an existing parking issue that I don't want to say has been neglected, but it just kind of when I'm talking to the citizens, they don't really seem to acknowledge the fact that they're also utilizing the street for parking. But I don't want to overgeneralize, but the common theme has been, we're doing it so. We don't want other people to do it also. But and I don't think that's really fair to this project. I think this project on its is sufficient, probably provides more parking than most of the existing projects have. I believe there is going to be an increased demand for parking, and that's why I think we should be, as a city, looking to improve that frontage road in collaboration with Caltrans so that we improve the flow. We widen it out. We give more people space to park so that it's not so treacherous driving through there, back in two lanes each way, or not two lanes each way, but, a lane each way and parking on either side of the road, which I think is going to happen. So I think the city should be looking at improving that road, first of all. The other thing is the height limit. I'm a little concerned about the height limit. I don't know that I'm willing to vote against the project because of how high it is. But again, one of those things that I'm a little concerned about, as the citizens that are around that area are concerned. So, I think I'm echoing the same thing they're thinking and feeling about this project. But at the same time, I don't know that I'm willing to prohibit my yes vote because of that. So just things I'm kicking around, and we're in comment section here. So I think that's basically what I have to say. It's not a perfect project. I don't think we're ever going to see a perfect project. I believe it's worthy, and I believe wholeheartedly in affordable housing, and I believe we need these houses. We need this housing stock for our workforce in Morro Bay. We have a lot of folks that aren't making six figures and can't afford to buy a house in Morro Bay, yours truly included. So I think we need to look at folks that are making a market wage and give them a market available house. So.
Okay. Susan, would you like to comment?
Sure. So I certainly am in favor of affordable housing projects, and this one looks good. I like the thoughtfulness that they've put into it. I also hear the concerns of the community and the neighbors about the traffic, about parking. I have to say that Greg Finch's letter that he wrote to us, where he really spelled out, you've got this project, you've got the potential Sonic restaurant project, you've got the traffic roundabout, and you've got the hotel at 255 Atascadero Road. So you have four potentially good-sized projects going in, all in a very close proximity. And because of the way the timing of them worked, things happened independently instead of cohesively. So if somebody had sat down and said, wow, we're going to have four big projects going on here all at once, maybe we need to do something different with sidewalks, with parking, with traffic flow. So that concerns me a little bit. And yet, you know, again, it's a good project. I'd hate to lose it. And it sounds like if we do put too many restrictions on it, or any, we will lose it. So those are comments. I would hope that somehow as a city, we could address this parking concern and get really creative with how we deal with overflow parking. I know mobile home parks, like, for example, Silver City and places where I have friends who live in mobile home parks, they do restrict the numbers of vehicles you can have. You know, you can have one, maybe two, depending on the size of where your unit is and all of that. And I understand that that can't be done in this situation. And I would agree that many of the kinds of the folks with the income levels we're looking at likely only have one vehicle, but we don't know that, and we can't condition it with that. So I go back and forth between the challenges, again, of the parking and the traffic and the good project that is in front of us. So let's hear what Michael has to say.
I've got a whole slew of things here, but I'll try to be succinct. First of all, I reviewed the last meeting, and I was particularly concerned about the design in terms of aesthetics, and nothing's been done to alleviate any of those things. So I'm assuming nothing's going to happen on that, and I just don't like. This costs too much to do this. This costs too much to do that. When there's a lot of excess detail in here and things like the stone veneer down at the base that are totally unnecessary. The thing that concerns me about the design is this courtyard is beautiful, but there's not a single window overlooking it. All these units are blank except for the front door onto the courtyard. So there's nothing in the unit plan. There's nothing I see anywhere that suggests there is going to be any supervision over that courtyard. There's no way. There's kitchens, there's bathrooms all along there, but nothing seems to have a window. So I'm not sure what some of these conditions that I think are going to be amazing, all of a sudden I think, I don't know, that's going to seem very odd to me. I appreciate that it got smaller in terms of the height. I appreciate it got smaller in terms of the height, especially given the cultural concerns here. The parking scares me, but you know, I don't think streets are meant to be permanent the way they're set up now. You know, I'm on a street that they don't park on both sides. There's one-way streets with parking on two sides. There's one-way streets with 45-degree angle parking or 30-degree angle parking. I think there's some things the city could look at in the future, but you know, we have to go on the record here saying that we're very concerned about the adequacy of the street infrastructure, even with this project meeting the criteria that apparently the state is putting out there for us. I think it's fantastic to have this number of people here. I think that this stretch of 41 in 10 or 15 years is going to be completely different than we envision it now. And hopefully we'll be have a new gateway to the city here and a roundabout, and the end of Atascadero Road will lead us to a wonderful place where people can visit our beaches and things like that. And so I think this is a big part of that. I think the concerns Commissioner Stewart was talking about are absolutely critical. The city shares a responsibility if this project goes forward to monitor and adjust with Public Works everything we can do in our power to look at the streetscapes around here. And I'm not opposed to, you know, shutting off Sunset to Atascadero Road. There's a whole series of loops and things that can be done with this small neighborhood. It doesn't have to be a throughfare. And I think as the Tascadero Road gets heavier and heavier, you know, it may be better off if we come into this neighborhood through Ironwood instead of through Sunset. And that's going to cut off some people's, you know, backdoor shortcut, but so be it. But I think the project is a very good one. I think the quality of the work that I've seen the applicant do elsewhere is at a high level, considering the population and the stresses of the economics on the situation. I do lament we don't have an elevator. I'm hobbled myself right now with my leg up on a chair with a bad foot. I couldn't go up to third floor right now if I wanted to. I think that's one of those issues that I think is an unfortunate part of the project, that perhaps that's inevitable again. But those are my comments. I wonder if anyone else has any follow-up opinions at this point.
Michael, could I jump in there on this?
Sure, go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. You know, I pretty much agreed, you know, with what's been stated here. But I think lost in this is a couple things. You know, this site will be developed at some point. And do we, at this point, you know, this is a viable project that's come forward. I think they put a lot of work into trying to make it compatible while still keeping their density and keeping their financial viability on this. The one thing that I would want to see on this is I'd want to see us to add the condition so it's in writing that that they prioritize the people who live there as people who either live in Morro Bay or work in Morro Bay. And I think Nancy said she had some language on that. So, you know, once again, I think it is safety. I think Sunset and the frontage road need to be rethought. But we're kind of, you know, we have to kind of, you know, bite our tongues to try to make the perfect project to allow, you know, what I think a good project to go through. You know, we need, you know, in this day and age, especially seeing the turmoil we have going on, this is a small thing that we can address to try to bring a little more equity into, you know, into the housing market here. And we've got to keep sight of the, so sometimes we have to take a look at the bigger picture on this. And so as far as I'm concerned, I think they've tried to do a pretty good job with their constraints that they have. If we can get some kind of calming measures or some kind of rethinking on Sunset and Atascadero Road, work with Caltrans, work with Public Works, that would help a lot. The you know, shared bike, shared car, whatever we can do to cut down vehicle trips. And we talked to them about green features before, and I didn't see anything specified, but I'm assuming that they're going to continue in that vein to make this more, you know, a more sustainable project. But I would like to see what the commission has to say about the condition to prioritize the project, placement in this project for basically, you know, people who either live or work in Morro Bay.
So if I could just interject, I've drafted already the condition. And the applicants agreed on it. So, and then they said that it's a standard condition that they prioritize tenants in the local town. And I've got so many versions of the rezo. Let me find it. Okay.
So would that include...
The new planning condition 12, rental priority to Morro Bay residents and workers. The applicant shall make the rental units available to Morro Bay residents and people working in Morro Bay first before making available to the general public. This rental priority program shall be to the same 55-year deed restriction period as noted in planning condition number 3. The applicant shall prepare a rental priority program that will achieve this requirement for review and approval by the community development director.
I like that, Nancy.
So as long as you guys are discussing, in all of this excitement, I forgot to mention that Public Works had some changes in the language of their conditions that they notified me of after the packets were sent out. So I have, I didn't have a chance to get those to you, but it's Public Works condition number 4, frontage improvements. They replaced A, which is the Rockview Street pavement, to clarify that it's the installation of Rockview Street to match and tie into the existing finished street from the existing multifamily development to the property line frontage of the proposed project. Then starting at the property line frontage street to expand per city standard detail, hillside street detail, all the way to the intersection of Sunset and Rockview. This is kind of Public Works speak. They also replaced B, which is now reads installation of curb gutter sidewalk and curb ramp at Sunset and Rockview intersection per city of Morro Bay standards off Rockview Street. And then finally on condition 8, they put a note in there that there was a belly in the existing 6-inch diameter main line that will be replaced with the new 8-inch diameter pipe in a 20-inch diameter casing, and the applicant is conditioned to pay a pro rata fee for their share of this replacement.
Okay. So clarification, Nancy, on that, if I remember right, the Rocky Street curb gutter and sidewalk only goes halfway to through the next the property further east of there. So are they going to
make... No, it matches existing.
Okay, so it's going to connect with the existing there.
The gap will go away.
The gap will go away. Okay, great.
No sidewalk, though, right?
There is a sidewalk.
On Rocky?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Good. Well, hi. It's Joe.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, the question I have to ask myself is, if this project goes forward and it turns out that we've underestimated the need for on-site parking by anywhere from 25% to 50%, and admittedly, it's a needed project here. But in view of that that inadequacy, do we make a good decision? And that's why I'm asking that we have more information. If my answer is no, if the on-site parking turns out to be that inadequate, I don't think I've made a good decision. And that's why I'm asking for more information to somehow create the semblance of a convincing argument that these 35 units will only require 35 cars. I think that's just preliminary. I don't think I have enough information to make a decision here. I'd like to make the decision which says, yes, I believe that given the economic status of most of these people, that indeed, they will only have one car, and they'll be able to make use of our public transit such as it is, and most of them will work in Morro Bay, but I don't know that.
Well, Joe, if it's any consolation, I'm making my decision based on the fact that it's inadequate. I mean, the parking in my opinion, is inadequate, but there's just no room to put more parking, and I think there's probably inadequate parking on most of the parcels adjacent. So, I mean, are we knowingly congesting the streets? I think we are, but I also think that that's an inevitability
of the state or the assembly bills that have been passed. I mean, where they have to, the cars have to go somewhere. They're probably going to go on the street. Kind of just nature of the beast.
You know, one thing that happens too when people are looking for housing, they look at the conditions, and you may get folks who come in and say, wow, there's only room for one car. I don't want to, you know, try and rent this space because there's not room for my car and my truck and my whatever else. I mean, that can happen too, that it can be self-limiting. There's no garage, so people are looking for storage space. They're going to look somewhere else. So I agree, though, Jesse. I think we're just going to have a problem. But.
So in if I can interject, Haslow has done this before. SLO might be a little behind the rest of the country as far as creating maximum parking ratios instead of minimum parking ratios. It does work. It can be done. It has to be managed. And what I think Scott Smith was saying before is they have different programs in their kind of thought base and toolbox, but you can't implement them before you have a problem. You implement them when there is a problem, and then you look for a solution. We had some good ideas tonight, and they will do that. And if they don't do that, that will limit who wants to rent their facility, because there's nothing much more annoying than coming home from work and not having any place to park. So they're providing one space for each tenant, and probably will have some system for if there aren't spaces used, that if other tenants need them, they could use them, or use them for guest parking, or use them for more EV charging stations. But what Scott had said about the housing element in Morro Bay, the last time we had a project that was 100% affordable housing in Morro Bay that was this many or more units was 1989. And so there's a reason why affordable housing isn't happening, because it is hard to do. It has so many constraints with funding and population and grants and requirements of multiple lenders. It's hard to do. It's expensive. And so when you talk about, I wish they could have an elevator, an elevator is $100,000 or more. And there are other apartments. There shouldn't be requirements for this building that aren't applicable to a market rate apartment. On the other hand, the state of California has said there are certain things that need to be incentives that are granted to a developer that wishes to tread down this path because it's scary and it's hard to do. And one of those is developer incentives, which can include parking and height, and they're already entitled to density greater than they're asking for. And I don't think anyone had a problem with the setback on Rockview, but this project can't go forward if you make a lot of changes. They don't have room for more parking. They can't reduce the units. It's a finely tuned balance between financing and cost.
Nancy, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, two things. So on the AB 1763 and then also on our other density, they could use the one of their density bonuses, because it's 100% low income, to basically put that credit towards the deficit in their parking, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So essentially they get their parking ratio where they want it by right from the state.
Correct.
Okay. So we would have to find that there is a, we would have to come up with the findings that this is a health hazard to disallow this project based on parking. Am I reading that correct?
It's yes, an adverse impact.
An adverse
impact. Or even to reduce the density.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of how I read it. I just wanted to make sure. Now, another thing, just let me bring this up, is can they have a program that where they give each person a, you know, each unit an assigned parking space? So yeah, there's a one-to-one ratio there.
Yeah, they can manage their on-site parking any way they want.
Okay, so that's not restricted in the housing code.
I mean, Scott can speak up if it is, but I think they can manage their parking the way it works for their project and their tenant base.
Yes, that's correct. We can. I wanted to jump in earlier, but I thought it was bad protocol or something. So but since you invited me, thank you. We can. And we do it both ways at different complexes, depending what seems to work better for who happens to live there. But we do have the ability to assign the parking. We're also not, I mean, I think we're open to the idea, if it can be done legally, to, and that's where preliminary indications are that it could be a fair housing issue, this idea of having a preference for, you know, kind of like we're doing a live, work, more obey, the preference of somebody who's not going to have more than one car. I mean, I think that's just, it's not that we're necessarily opposed to having that kind of a preference. It's, if we can't, if we're not allowed legally, but then we're not allowed, but we're open to continue exploring the, you know, get the legality around that.
I
think I just need clarification then. So in order for us or for myself to find the project's inappropriate because it has inadequate on-site parking, I would have to conclude reasonably that inadequate parking constitutes a health threat?
Adverse impact upon public health and safety or physical environment or on any real property that's listed in, that's historic resource. So those things. So.
Oh, but adverse effect on physical environment we're talking about, not health.
Well, public health, safety, or physical environment.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is the category of an adverse effect on physical environment is a viable reason to not approve the project.
I think we would have a hard time or impossible time substantiating that.
I'm sorry?
I think we would have almost an impossible, you know, time trying to substantiate that. And the burden of proof is on the city.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is interesting because what I'm hearing is that we are, in effect, precluded from finding fault with this project on the basis of its adequate parking outside. I mean, it's tough to get
to
the conclusion from what I'm hearing.
So when they're advertising these units for rent, they're going to be saying it's a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, or three-bedroom unit with one parking place. The conditions that are on them. So people are going to know when they're applying to live here that there's one parking place.
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, just like all of everything that's for rent that has some kind of limitation, it should be stated in the description. Yeah.
But I think we're kind of neglecting the bigger picture of housing authority placement. So, I mean, you really don't go there. It's not Burger King. You don't get it your way. You kind of go to the housing authority because you don't have anywhere else to go. You need this reduced affordable housing type situation. So you're going to the housing authority and they're telling you what you're having to do. I mean, that's just kind of the black and white of it. So. That killed the conversation. Well, I was going to mention something about.
Good job on this.
Sure. I'm sorry.
Okay. Basically, I'd just like to get back. If we can just clarify and get consensus about the prioritizing the project for Morro Bay residents and employees, can we get through that condition?
That one works for me.
Me too.
Me too.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you, guys.
I'm going to go back in the weeds, as Mr. Jess says, one last time. And I know this is not something we can really even talk about here, but I'm going to say it anyway. The elevator situation bothers me because I believe the intent of the code is going to be that this is publicly funded. This is administered by a county organization. This is the definition of public housing. And to call it privately, to get off in a technicality of funding, I think kind of neglects the intent. We have folks that are going to be special needs or, have special circumstances, and they're not going to have accessible housing because when you're in Chapter 11B, you're talking about public housing. When you're in Chapter 11A, you're talking about privately funded housing, apartments and things. This is not that. This is housing authority. This is the definition of public. And I'll stop, and I know we can't discuss it, and I know Scott's going to do his due diligence when he does building permits. But that's just my opinion on how this should unfold. So.
We will absolutely do the code analysis on it, Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, sir.
I want to get down into the weeds one more time. This is a, Nancy, this is a final review for us, right? If we approve this, we're accepting what's on here.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I would like to...
With the modifications of the conditions for the added condition to planning for local priority and the public works changes.
Okay. I would just like to suggest that in the preliminary plant list, the tree listed as C, the Mediterranean fan palm, I think is not acceptable along Atascadero Road. I don't think we're going to get any filtering of much of anything along there. Those trees grow fast and they're invasive, and I think that they're not native, and they may be on the street tree list, but I don't want to see Atascadero lined with fan palm trees. I think that's a huge mistake. I don't know where they are. They don't really call them out as to what is what on the conceptual landscape plan. But, eight and nine are shown as street as on the landscape plan as just as trees, I think. I'm not as concerned about what happens on Rockview, but I don't want Atascadero to start looking like California Avenue by Cal Poly. Like, it's just totally wrong.
Well, Michael, as you know, I'd like to see palm trees banned from the face of the earth. But
yes,
unless you're on a southern island, South Pacific Island. Okay. I'm sorry. Can I interject again? Sorry, Michael.
Sure.
There was one other question that was brought up, by my meeting with the neighbors, and they talked about street lighting on that corner, the frontage road and Sunset. What are back to staff? What are the thoughts on that? What are the possibilities of getting a streetlight there or, to improve safety at night?
We have to look into it. Our streetlights are owned by PG&E.
Okay. It seems like with the Sonic going in there and also the high school traffic and people coming down there, that might be a appropriate location on either side of the road, but somewhere to get some lighting in that intersection. Can that be put on a to-do list?
I think we'll just run it through on Public Works. Happy to do that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
Well, I do have a comment. So are we all agreed then that, you know, adequate on-site parking is irrelevant for the purposes of our determination tonight? Because I think that's what we have said.
Well, my comments were that we're giving a one-third of what would be the required parking. We're deleting a third of the required parking, the way some of our codes read. But the way the other codes that were imposed on us by the state, we have to find unusual circumstances to not accept this amount of parking. I think it is, you know, my opinion is that he takes on a burden if this does create a localized parking situation on Sunset, Rockview, and the Frontage Road, that Public Works has to take a look at the passage and parking requirement, parking regulations around that whole kind of super block there.
Right.
And look at all available measures to increase capacity to park and perhaps decrease capacity to drive through.
Right. I'm not looking at a way to somehow evade making, you know, an unattractive decision ultimately, but, you know, I don't see how now having said that I was in favor of, you know, better modeling so I could make a decision on whether the parking was adequate or not. But now I realize that that's pointless. I mean, what I'm hearing is that we really have no business, you know, even contemplating whether the parking is adequate or not. My only comment is I think very few people understand that.
I agree with that.
I agree with that also. I don't think we have the ability to deny it, basically because they could use one of their
developer bonuses to mitigate the parking inadequacy, essentially.
So you might, I mean, Assembly Bill 1763, if Morro Bay had a more active transit service, they would be entitled to half of the parking that they're asking for. So that's the direction that the state is going. If our bus service was more frequent, we wouldn't have this conversation. They wouldn't have to have 35. They could have 17 and a half.
Mm-hmm. I understand. I understand now. Yeah.
Additional comments?
No, I guess I'll try the resolution here.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. I guess, let's see, resolution number PC 11-20, we resolve as the Morro Bay Planning Commission adopting a mitigated negative declaration of environmental impact and approving coastal development permit number CDP 20-001 and conditional use permit CUP 19-12 and parking exemption PKG 19-05, approval for a 35-unit affordable apartment complex proposed for a 9.4-acre site in MCRR-R4-PD-SP zone and is not located within the coastal appeal jurisdiction at 405 Atascadero Road. Then, with the inclusion of the language for prioritization of Morro Bay residents and workers. Any other additions to that?
And the modifications of the public works conditions.
And the modifications so stated for the public works.
And we're accepting Nancy's additional condition, the way it was stated.
Yes.
deletion of fan palm tree from the tree list for the street trees?
We'll add that as... Do we need that as a condition, or can that be a direction?
You should add it as a condition, and then it be removed and replaced, subject to review and approval by me.
Okay. So added.
I'll second.
Who seconded?
Jesse.
Thank you.
So. Any further discussion? Okay, Nancy, would you call the roll, please?
Yes. Temporary Chair Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart.
Yes.
Commissioner Barone.
Aye.
Commissioner Graffia.
Aye.
Resting Chair Lohr.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll look at the, see if I find my schedule here. We did new business, there's no unfinished business. Do we have any discussion about future agenda items from the commission?
I'd like to just make a comment or make a, you know, maybe a future agenda item, you know. With the problems that the local restaurants are having with reduced seating and stuff, Scott, is there any way that we could allow the restaurants to basically create patio space in some of the parking areas or surrounding their restaurants, or so that they can, during this crisis, that they can increase their seating capacity?
So I'm working on a staff report, earlier prior to the start of the Planning Commission meeting to do just that. It's going to council at the next council meeting next week. It would waive fees for temporary use permits and for encroachment permits if they wanted to place seating in the right-of-way, say on the sidewalk, or in parking lots. They could use a portion of their parking lot for seating with the temporary use again. My ask of the council will be to have the fee waived. I'm working with the Coastal Commission on what we can do down on our waterfront lease sites as well. Hoping to have a conversation with them later this week to get that hammered out as well. So yeah, working on all those things.
Okay. Even, you know, going to the extreme case of creating a one-way, you know, a one-way street down on the Embarcadero and having have some of those restaurants be able to take out, you know, some seating on the Embarcadero, you know, increase the, you know, the walkability of the area so that we're not so impacted, so people aren't so impacted on that 5 to 8 foot sidewalk with people going both ways. I know there's one-way arrows, but people aren't following them.
So. Yeah, we did that too. I had back and forth with Coastal Commission on that. They supported us making it one way for a portion of the Embarcadero, but our businesses down on the waterfront didn't want it. At least they didn't want it up to this point. They may change their mind when they find out there's probably some limited ability to do it on the lease sites. So we are also looking at potentially closing off some of the street ends down there to do something along those lines, like add seating, something like that could be shared, assuming that the businesses are willing to share in the cleaning of those types of tables and things like that. So, we are actively having those conversations right now, and I've already had conversations with the Coastal Commission about it, and about having those approved through a waiver process as sort of temporary measures to address the economic impacts from COVID-19.
Yeah, I think anything we can do that can help support, you know, especially the restaurants, you know, and the small shops, you know, that's critical to, you know, allow them to be able to put some of their merchandise outside if they can, or whichever, whatever way they want to be able to help mitigate this I think this is not going to go away in the next couple of weeks. So I think whatever we can do to support them and give them some options would be helpful.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, we're working on all that. We've been engaged with the chamber on this. We've done outreach. I've been on a bunch of Zoom calls with our business owners, both restaurants, retail type folks as well, going through what they're interested in, what they're not. Don't want to tee something up they don't want to do, kind of like the road closure thing on the Embarcadero. They had concerns about it and didn't really want to do that. So I said, okay, well, let's pivot away from that and look at some other options for you. And so we're doing that.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, I know I was negative about some of the aesthetic aspects of the last project, but I think it's a fantastic addition to a place that's the kind of project that belongs there. And I think it's unfortunate that we don't have a master plan or an area plan that looked at that 41 corridor better, pretty much from Ironwood all the way down to the beach. You know, that's a thing. You know, it's going to be a thing in the future. And we're getting these piecemeal projects that we'll see the connectivity come up at some point. But I think there's a few more parcels, not as large as this one, that are still available on that 41 corridor that we could see other things coming in. And this is the way I think things are going to play out. We're going to see high-density housing in there. And I think some of the work that's been done is aesthetically really nice. And I think it's good to have people buying things on the stores on Main Street and kids walking to the high school and things like that. But we are going to have to look at it as a city at this, the impacts of this additive project creep on the streetscapes. I think it's going to be a significant thing to take a look at. And we may not be able to do anything about it because of the state regulations that are here. That's part of our job too. So I don't know if that's not part of our general plan to have a specific plan like that, but I think that's the kind of thing that would help that area.
Actually, Commissioner Lucas, it can be part of the general plan. I mean, I'm sure you recall that we have master plans called out for the power plant facility, obviously, for redevelopment of that. And we also had that requirement also for what would happen with the wastewater treatment plant, the current existing wastewater treatment plant site as well. So there could be something along the lines put into the general plan like that when we bring it back in front of you. So I would definitely give some consideration to that. We're wrapping up our review of that right now, so you should be seeing it later this summer.
Yeah, I think the whole idea of, you know, the walking and the kids going back and forth to the high school, hopefully they go back to the high school at some point. And then just the development that's inevitable along that road. And we saw with the hotel on the other side of Main Street, down on the beach block, that, you know, there were citizens interested in the nature of the connectivity of the walking system and the bike system and things like that. And this is a whole nexus, not just of the 41 corridor, but all the other things that go with it. So I'll hold till later on that. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll community development director comments.
I don't have anything. Chair Luer brought up the item that I was going to raise with you, like, you know, that I was doing that. That's all I had.
Do you envision, from what you've heard from the governor's announcements, do you imagine we're going to be in this kind of technological meeting realm for some time yet?
Yeah, probably for a few more meetings at a minimum. You know, they would need to probably lift the order before we would, you know, go back to regular meetings.
Okay.
Or at least limited regular meetings we can socially distance from a, you know, staff and a planning commission standpoint at the hall if we wanted to do that, I suppose. So
okay.
It's probably at least a few weeks away, a few meetings away.
Thank you, Scott and staff. And so if no one else has any other comments, adjourn to the next regular Planning Commission meeting on June 16th, 2020 at 6 p.m. via teleconference, Zoom, interwebs, all that good stuff.
Thank you, everybody.
Real good. See you later.
See you guys.